Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listening, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Yes. Good morning, I'm Ryan Baker. The Cleveland Cavaliers are in a 2-0 hole in the Eastern Conference Finals after losing to the Knicks 109-93. Josh Hart led 5 in double figures for New York with 26. Donovan Mitchell had 26 for the Cavs. Game 3 is Saturday night in Cleveland at 8. The Cleveland Guardians have won 6 in a row after completing a 4-game sweep of the Detroit Tigers, winning 3-1. Patrick Bailey hit his second home run since coming to Cleveland. Joey Cantillo pitched 5 2/3 for the win. The Buckeye baseball season came to an end with a 3-0 loss to Michigan at the Big Ten tournament out in Omaha. The Montreal Canadiens won Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals in the Stanley Cup playoffs, beating Carolina 6-2. Former Buckeye Jakub Dovish made 25 saves in the win. This one's sponsored by BMI Federal Credit Union, voted best credit union for the past 8 years in a row by CBUS Top Picks. Visit BMIFCU.org to learn more.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Dom Tabari here.
Oh, Reese came in and he handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then, he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me. Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging. And only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
All right, let's do it live on a Friday edition of the program. Bo, the boys with you for the next three. Bake is here. Joshua Perry is here. You look great, by the way. I don't know what Tyvus is running his mouth for. He's coming at you about things like... I think he is. I mean, this is on. By the way, him just you being like it's Joshua, and he's like Josh.
Yeah,
and
that's he doesn't it. Care. He Can doesn't we talk care. About it for a second?
So go ahead. Well, before we get, Doug will come on at 11:30. We'll do the what we learned this week at 11, and then 10:30 we got Tim. But we have more important business right away before we get into Mr. Powell, and that is the trial of Urban Meyer. Are you prepared as our star witness, Mr. Perry?
Sure.
Okay, Mr. Perry. Were you a member of the 2014 Ohio State football team?
Yes, I was.
Would you say that you were very aware of the coaching stylings of Urban Meyer?
Very aware I was.
How would you describe the coaching style of Urban Meyer in 2014, Mr. Perry?
I say this lovingly. Coach Meyer was a tyrant.
A tyrant.
A tyrant.
A tyrant was the word. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, a tyrant. Mr. Perry, are you aware? Let me rephrase. Mr. Perry, were you aware of a social media tweet by a then backup quarterback, Cardale Jones of Cleveland Glenville High School?
Yes.
I can read the tweet, sir, if you're unfamiliar.
Well, I think we should have the tweet for the record.
Okay, good point, and I will take that advice. The tweet in question is, quote, "Why should we have to go to class if we came here to play football? We ain't come to play school. Classes are pointless." You are familiar of this tweet now as you were in 2014, Mr. Perry?
Yes, I am.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, this week on a podcast titled The Script, Mr. Meyer was a guest of Mr. Jones. The previously discussed incident was discussed there. Here was Mr. Meyer on how he handled it.
When I saw the tweet, because I guess I'd never overreacted. Was I upset? No. I mean, it's stupid stuff, and we all have done stupid stuff. So it was Cardell. I knew Cardell. Cardell didn't take school as serious as he should to, but that makes him like most young people that, you know, are really concentrating football. So, yeah, it's a great story. But, you know, I think it's I can say it now because I don't care. But, I mean, I could care less when Cardell said that tweet, and because I knew Cardell. I knew we had to kick his ass every once in a while, and we did.
Mr. Perry, do you believe that the recanting of this story by Coach Meyer is true?
Did he claim that he wasn't an overreactor? Like, let's just start there.
Mr. Perry, the jury wants the truth. We believe we're entitled to the truth.
What are we talking about?
Do you believe this at all?
No. No, I mean, and here's...
You were there.
There are two portions of this.
This is so fun. I just think it's so fun. My favorite part of the whole thing is at the end when he goes, I'm old, so I don't care anymore. Like, which is always a fun disclaimer when you get to be like 60. You can just, like, my dad's there, he's almost 80. Like, he just says whatever he wants.
Right.
Half the time, it's utter nonsense, but he does. There's no way this is how this went down. It can't be.
Well, there are two sides of it. Is number one, this whole idea of we didn't come here to play school. Like, yes, you did, partially. And more it's becoming true that people don't go to play school. But
right.
At the time, that was certainly a part of the arrangement. And Urban was hell-bent on guys graduating and being placed in careers. So, like, he was mad about that at the time. There's the other part where he cared because that's embarrassing. And mm-hmm. If there was one thing you weren't going to do is you weren't going to be an individual who took the spotlight in a way that reflected poorly on the team.
Yeah.
So for every reason in this, he was mad. But I'm pissed off that he's saying that he was never an overreactor. Like, sir, that was your whole style, was overreacting.
There was a t-shirt that Homage put out. I want to say 13 or 14. Actually, it might have been more like 12. That said, it was like an old school looking like Woody t-shirt, and it said Relentless Ohio State Football. And it was something that Urban said in a presser. Relentless. And I knew him because I'd covered him in Florida. So I knew what was coming. I knew the tornado that was coming up here. And I knew that all the positives would come with it. I mean, I remember in the advance of him being hired, I said, you're getting Don Draper selling Mercedes-Benz. And that was before John Hamm was selling Mercedes-Benz. It was going to be that easy to sell this program for Urban Meyer, just a different level. But the idea that anybody had a good time until afterwards, the man was relentless. Utterly relentless. So, yes, I do not believe that that is the real truth, that he was nonplussed by Cardale's tweet. And my guess is he ripped him one way up and down the other. And probably, I think I even remember the presser where we asked him about it. And I'm sure we could find the quote from it, but I don't remember him being particularly pleased with any of it. And I can't imagine he was pleased or that cool with it behind closed doors either. And by the way, he shouldn't have been.
Right.
He shouldn't have been cool about it.
So let's go back to the presser point, yeah. Right? So did you went to media availabilities in person?
Always.
Okay.
I never missed one.
And you knew how tense that room was.
Yeah.
Like, even preparing to ask him a question, like, you know, you can't stumble over the question. You certainly can't ask him anything that he might think is dumb. No. Right. Like, okay, so that was from your perspective. People in the media felt that. Now, imagine being a player sitting in that meeting room and he's asking you questions, just question after question after question. Right. Not even giving you time to think, not really giving you time to give an answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no way. Right. Like, there was nothing chill about how anything went down.
You just hit it. There was nothing chill. There was nothing chill about any of it. I appreciated him so much because, if you post game, I always ask the first question in the post game in those days. I would always ask the first one. So I would ask the first one right away and we would go. And what I always really loved about Urban was you ask him a direct question, you get a direct answer.
Yep.
There was no real with Tress, and Tress was on with Brother Bone and Nephew Tyvus earlier this week, and they had him on, and it was like, for me, it was almost like PTSD, and I love Tress. I love the lieutenant governor. I love the winning, all of it, and way he went about his business, but Tress was a lot like Stefanski.
Mm-hmm.
He'd talk. You'd do a 35-minute press conference with him at the Jack Nicklaus Museum on a Tuesday at noon, and you'd sit there for 35 minutes. It was be done, and you'd be like, okay, what just happened?
Do we have anything? What can we use? Like, he just would talk a lot and not say much. I mean, that was just his style. I mean, that's why we called him the senator.
Right.
Long before anybody had thought he was going to be a lieutenant governor. But he just was such a politician in it. So Urban was just a breath of fresh air for all of us that covered that team. And certainly it wasn't anything personal, people liking Tress more than Urban or anything like that. That wasn't the point. It was just in terms of doing the job that we did. Now you had a guy that you ask a question, you got an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that he had any filter at all. So like when he says, I don't care what I say, I don't know that he ever did.
No. Do you remember in 2012 when it was, I think during spring or it might've been during training camp, he was asked about the wide receivers and he called them a clown show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do remember that.
Like there was no confusion about anything with him. And it's a beautiful thing. Transparency is great.
Yeah.
It also puts you on edge a ton. But like, yeah, you ask him a question, you're going to get an answer from him.
Yeah. No, it was great. So yeah, I think now you can look back at it and he can say whatever he wants, but I don't buy it. I don't buy for a second. He wasn't mad about that tweet. Why the hell is Tyvus coming at you? It's a holiday weekend.
He does this, and I don't know why he likes to pick this fight in particular. So he loves to talk about everybody's physical appearance, especially here around the station. To feel bad for Bone and, you know, Tyvus sitting in the studio with him for 3 hours a day and just making jokes. But Tyvus likes to talk about some of my weight gain, which is a real thing. But I love to remind him that he is further away from his playing weight than I am from mine.
There you go.
So he's fatter now than I am, number one. And number two, this is just raw pounds. If we wanted to break this into percentages because he's a smaller guy to begin with, oh my God, it's not even a competition. He's just not big close. Now. He blew up. He blew up.
He's a D-end.
That's it.
He's become a D-end.
Put his hand in the dirt.
By the way, Bo, did you hear Tyvus say this morning on the show?
I only do that for a Polish boy.
You're gonna do a lot of rejoins just recording the stuff that comes out of that kid's mouth. Certainly could.
The best part was he was just getting on Bone about saying something that was taken, like Bone was talking about something else and he said like something about I love it because I can barely get my mouth around it or something. Oh, and it was out of context. Lord. And Tyvus is like, I can't believe you said that. And then immediately after that, he says, I only do that to a Polish boy.
It's going to be that type of show, kids. It's a get out of town Friday, long weekend edition of the program. Doug and Tim, what we learned. Lots of fun along the way. We're off and running on a Friday. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
A lot has changed in 30 years, but we're still that old shoe that feels worn in and well-loved. And well, we smell a little, but whew, you've accepted that. The Fan.
Performance matters.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Have you ever met a man who wins money betting on tennis? Enter Scotty Vegas. Join Scotty and Dave Biddle for On the Money.
Presented by Ohio for Responsible Gambling.
Sunday mornings at 9 on The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We are going to see some heavy rain develop as we head into the afternoon and evening. Could see some localized flooding, so make sure you stay weather aware. Temperatures getting into the mid-60s with breezy winds, and then for tonight, the rain continues overnight. It will be steady, and temperatures down into the upper 50s with the breezy winds continuing. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Pull up a stool and ask the bartender for something neat. Because Uncle Bo is on the radio. This is Bishop and Friends.
Well, no joy in Mudville for the Cavaliers as they lose in New York against the Knicks last night, 109-93. Joshua Bake, what I was really interested to see is if the Cavaliers could have early momentum, and it was kind of set up for it because the weather's going to be pure, just utter crap this weekend. And so would Central Ohio jump on this bandwagon? I'm not sure we'll ever know just because they're down 0-2. If they win the first one, then potentially you got a little of that. And I think there probably still is a little for expats from Northeast Ohio and such, but, I think losing last night kind of puts this on the back burner for a while. They won't play again until Saturday. I don't necessarily think they're going to get swept or anything like that. I think the series starts when you win on the other team's home court. But now game three Saturday is a must win. And the second half was just a non-show up situation for Cleveland. So I was watching. My kids were pretty jacked up. They were into it for sure. Bootsy really was, which surprised me a little bit. He was completely locked in. He and I watched until he went to bed. But then as the Knicks start to celebrate or separate rather, at that point, I'm good. And then I jumped in and watched a little of the hockey. And quite honestly, that was 4-1 by the time I saw that. Joshua, which were you into either one of these last night?
Yeah, I was in and out of the Cavaliers. Saw parts of the beginning of it, saw late in the game when it wasn't a competition anymore. I mean, it feels to me the missed opportunity was game one, right?
Yeah,
like that's
for sure.
That's the one that you want to get. Last night is what it is. I don't think they played particularly well. And one of the things that has to happen to me in these series, Matty Ice and I talked about this the other day when I was on Rothman Nice, but you've got to have some of maybe your lesser known guys, some of your role players step up. And it's what we saw with New York. I mean, Josh Hart goes out there, he gives you 12 a game throughout the season. He's, 26 points or whatever the number was. So that's something that the Cavaliers have to figure out. You know, you got to get some of that production there. They haven't played well in the postseason away from home anyway. So hopefully getting back in Cleveland will give them the boost that they need. But just feels like a big missed opportunity with the way that game one went, that this series really should be a 1-1 series right now, if not a little bit better for the Cavs.
I was more locked into the hockey, but from what I saw of this game, Joshua, your point about the role players seems really spot on, because it seemed like the Cavs were willing to let Josh Hart beat them, and he did. When he was on the court, it seemed like the Knicks were willing to let Sam Merrill beat them, and Sam Merrill was a big oafer.
Yeah, and he had some good opportunities, too. I mean, he had open looks.
Great looks.
Yeah, and just it wasn't falling for him.
Yeah, it's interesting. I find this to be true in the association now. Whichever team makes more threes wins.
Yeah,
it's kind of that simple now. They both take a ton of them. Last night, by NBA standards, this is actually low. The Knicks took 36. The Cavs took 35. Cavs made 9, and the Knicks made 13. Well, that's 12 points right there. So, and you talk about those role players. Merrill was 0 of 7 from 3. Strus was 1 of 4. Jalen Tyson was 0 of 3. So, those are guys that you need to get something out of. And combined, they were 1 of 14 from 3. That ain't it. That ain't it. So that's, you know, when they get to, so Saturday will be interesting, especially if the weather's bad around here, where it kind of looks like Saturday's going to be a complete washout. That'll be an interesting one to see if people jump on the bandwagon. The hockey was nuts, Bick.
It was. Real quick on the Cavs, I'm going to be very interested to see whenever their season ends, and hopefully that's after the NBA championships, but whenever their season ends, I'm going to be interested to see what exactly is wrong with Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah.
What injury it is. He did. But he just doesn't look right.
No,
they even talked about it on the broadcast last night a little bit.
Well, something has to be wrong, because the fourth quarter of game one, where they just kept going to Harden over and over again, and he couldn't get that, was like, well, where's Mitchell in this stuff? So I've been saying that for two rounds. Like, I just think he's dealing with some stuff.
This is a thing with him, though, by the way. Like, postseason, there's always a little something hampering him. And then, of course, you've got postseason James Harden. So it's like the two guys that you would want to pull through the most are guys who have a little bit of postseason troubles here.
I'm not suggesting this is the case with Mitchell, but there is definitely a generation of guys now who are not that interested in playing unless they feel perfect.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
I mean, I see this in the league. Sometimes it's in college, too. They don't want bad stuff on tape.
Sure.
I don't think that's what's going on with Mitchell. I think he's legitimately hurt. I think he's gotten it out. But there's also like this notion of like, yeah, if I'm not perfect, I'm not all the way there. And they need him to be. I also don't know. Maybe he's miscast. Like, I don't know if he is a, is Donovan Mitchell like a get out of the way, let me go run? I don't think he's that type of player.
I think he's close to it.
I do too. I think he's more of a 1A.
Yeah. I agree with that.
I don't think he's an alpha.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he's a, you know, I don't know that he's got, like, Brunson seems to have that in him.
Yeah, he does.
Like that dog. And I don't know that Mitchell has that in him. Now, this is a guy who scored 70, so he's not like, he's plenty gifted. He's a first-team All-NBA guy and all of that, so he's incredibly good. He's the best player to play for the Cavaliers, not named LeBron James. I mean, that's what he is. Like, yeah. People will talk about Price and Darty and all of that, but that's nostalgia. That's what he is. He's the best. He's the best Cavalier, second best Cavalier of all time is what he is. So we'll see. We'll see if they can get a little bit of luck on the home court on Saturday if they can. And the hockey was nuts, Bick.
Yeah. And something about this Montreal Canadiens team, I think it was in that in their series with Buffalo, the first goal was scored within 6.5 minutes of every game, the start of it.
Yeah.
Last night, Carolina scores with 30 or 40 seconds into the game. Montreal answers probably before they can even announce the goal scorer in the arena.
Mm-hmm.
They score again. There's three goals in the first 4 minutes of that game last night, four goals in the first eight. I don't know what it is with these Montreal Canadiens and the way these games are played, but they get off to fast starts in Montreal. It's pretty amazing that giving up the first goal in that atmosphere, and they're the youngest team in the NHL. Maybe they don't even know.
Oh, I didn't
what's
know
going on. Maybe they're just too naive to realize, oh my gosh, we're down in this building.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't affect them at all, and they cruise. They seem like, and I understand, Colorado has to get through Vegas, and Colorado has been the best team in the NHL for most of the year.
Yeah.
There's something about this Montreal team that seems like they're destined.
Well, to me, I'm rooting for them. I mean, they're the last Canadian team to win a cup. What, 93? They beat the Kings and Gretzky, Patrick Waugh. I mean, that's a long time ago. So I'm rooting for them. I think of my boy, my old buddy Mike Thompson a lot, who used to produce Track Time for me when we used to do that show, and was a great guy. Used to run the sports department with the Ohio News Network when I first got here. Great dude. His two passions in life, well, three, are the Indianapolis 500, the Green Bay Packers, and the Montreal Canadiens. And so the Montreal Canadiens, like, being this close for him, all while the Indianapolis 500 is going this weekend, all of that seems like a pretty big win. So they're an easy route for me.
One more on the hockey. And I don't necessarily miss any of these players, and I was never sad when they left. But when you see Josh Anderson and Alex Texier, who were a big part of that Tampa series for the Blue Jackets, having success, and you see Eric Robinson getting a goal last night for Carolina, it's just like salt in the wounds. Now, the Josh Anderson thing, I was okay with that. He wanted more money, thought he was more than a third liner. The Jackets didn't want to give it to him, and that was fine. And guess what? He's a third liner on this Montreal Canadiens team, and he's a valuable piece, and he's a good third liner. At the time, he thought he was worth more than that, so I wasn't mad about it. Texier, it just didn't work out. And Eric Robinson's just a fourth line guy, but he's found a home on the fourth line there in Carolina. Just kind of sucks to see the CBJ guys chipping in.
Yeah. Sure does. Sure does, team player. It really sucks. It's no good at all. So, but look, we got the Buckeye goalie is here for the Canadians as well. So there's a rooting interest. I'll root for those guys. Yeah. So we'll see. But, and then it'll continue this whole weekend, which brings us to something we're going to get into here in 2 minutes. And that is, does the Memorial Day weekend deliver the way that it needs to on the sports landscape? We'll have a little bit of fun with this in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
Sponsored by Apex Pros.
The pros who knows.
All right, here's what's up on a Friday, get out of town Friday edition of the program. A lot of people probably did like Reese did. You take today off, then you got that 4-day weekend. Pretty savvy. The weather is not cooperating with us. Usually Memorial Day, it can be cool, but usually it's not a rain out, and it feels like we're headed there. Tonight and then all day tomorrow and then a lot of Sunday too. So a lot of folks are going to be inside, which kind of got me thinking, does this holiday need more on the sports calendar? And I saw Alex Rodriguez talking about this, I want to say about a month ago, and he was talking about baseball, and he said baseball really should own the summer holidays. It should own Memorial Day, 4th of July, and Labor Day, to which I thought, I don't know if you can create those things now. Here's what's on the table for this weekend. You got the Indianapolis 500. You've got, if you're into the auto race, you got the Coca-Cola 600, and we'll get to the tragedy with Kyle in a minute. And then you're going to have the NBA and NHL playoffs. You'll have all the baseball going on as well. So there's a lot going on. This is just that one weekend, and it's just a factor of the time of year where you just don't have any sort of football of any way. And I do wonder if at some point if we switch spring football, if spring football will start like next week at some point. So that could be something that happens. I guess you have OTAs with the NFL, so it's happening there a lot. Do you guys think it delivers the way that it needs to for a holiday weekend?
I mean, probably not, but I just don't know what you do.
The options are.
Yeah, that's the hard part about it, right? Like, I think the postseason action that we get is pretty good, right? And so if you have the opportunity to sit down and watch some of that, you're probably satisfied. Baseball, for me, you could talk me into it, but I need to see your headliners, right? Like, I want to see, you know, Aaron Judge hitting dingers. That's what I need in order for that to work. I'm following the WNBA right now. I just don't know how many other people are, but if as a league they decided that they wanted to play up this weekend, might be able to boost them a little bit, but the options feel like they're thin.
That's interesting. So when did your WNBA, when did that start?
Well, it really took off with Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and that whole class coming in. But I had always been a pretty big women's basketball fan. And it really started for me when Kelsey Mitchell was here at Ohio State, and we overlapped for a little bit. And for folks who like didn't watch a lot of that, like it was raining threes before people were really talking about it, just scoring at will. And so I followed her when she went into the W and started watching. And then obviously the Aces doing what they were doing and Asia being phenomenal out there. Like, it's always been a pretty good attraction. But once again, it's just not something that I think broadly people have caught on to outside of the Caitlin Clark hype.
You might, I don't know that you might be wrong on that, buddy. I mean, the only thing that we can have to kind of measure this stuff is ratings,
sure,
social interactions. If you're giving, and I don't know what the WNBA is bringing to the table this weekend. Like, are they bringing a marquee matchup on what do they got? I mean, tonight
they got a few games.
Fever Valkyries tonight.
Sunday. They got a big day on Wednesday where they've got like five games. But once again, it's not, you know, I'm not looking at these matchups and saying like, I got to watch these, I guess.
Yeah, they got, I'm trying to see if they have any network games this weekend. They do an NBC 3:30 game, Wings and Liberty. So that's on Sunday. So that'll be the one that'll push the most. Everything else is a streamer, it looks like. Bake, which sporting event are you most interested in this weekend?
It's probably the Indy 500 has the big name, but I don't really pay attention to IndyCar racing anymore. So it'd probably be the Coca-Cola 600. I think the UFL is making a mistake not having games on Memorial Day on Monday.
Man, that's a great point. I think that fizzled, didn't it? There was a lot of momentum first few weeks, Bake, and then it really fizzled.
Yeah, it looks like they've got Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, but nothing on Monday this week. I want to go back to Alex Rodriguez's point about baseball. If baseball wants to do that, you've got to schedule the hits. You need the rivalries to be these weekends. Then you need Yankees, Red Sox. You need the Ohio Cup. You need White Sox, Cubs. You need those games, or maybe Cubs, Cardinals, whatever your rivalry is there that you think is the best. If you're baseball and you want to own these, play your rivalries on these holiday weekends.
Absolutely. Yeah. We just did the Ohio Cup. Was it last weekend?
Yeah.
That should be this weekend.
Postpone it a week. Yes.
No, that should be this weekend. To your UFL point, yeah, I mean, they're on network tonight. Defenders and Storm tonight at 8, and then tomorrow, the Aviators, they're 3 o'clock on Big ABC.
Who's still watching that?
Well, I will say this. If the weather wasn't sketchy, I would probably go to that game tomorrow. Just because it's a 3 o'clock game, you can get out of there quick. But
I thought I wanted to go. Yeah, I wanted to go to their opener, and then I've just watched them.
Yeah,
I don't know if I could spend an afternoon.
I was at the opener, and it was a good time.
I know the environment was great. The team's not delivering right now.
The only way, and we had Mike Rapoli on in the lead up of that game, the owner of the league, and when we had him on, I posed this question to him, and He answered it, but also kind of, he didn't want to go all in on it because he wants it to be a standalone on its own.
Right.
That league needs NFL affiliation.
Totally agree.
That league needs the Cleveland Browns to send Taylen Green to go quarterback him.
Yes.
And to go get better. Like quite honestly, you could send all of the young quarterbacks in the league if you had affiliations. Like the Columbus Aviators their rosters could be filled by the practice squad or depth players for the Bengals and Browns and hell, even the Steelers. But especially at quarterback.
Yeah.
One of the big beefs that NFL coaches have about quarterback development, and you see this all the time. Well, we give up on quarterbacks too quickly. That's because they really can't develop them.
Right.
You really can't. There's no time. There's people were so misinformed last summer with like the Browns with the quarterback reps. There aren't enough reps.
Agree.
to go around. It's an hour 20 practice, man. This isn't Bear Bryant, Junction Boys, 4.5 hour practices 3 times a day.
Right.
They get one practice. It's 1 hour and 15 minutes. Who do you think they're going to give the reps to? The guy who's going to start. So the young quarterbacks who aren't the dudes and aren't first round picks, they really don't have time to put into them the way that they need to. And I think this league could thrive if there was some sort of an affiliation.
I tend to agree with that. And I think the players who would go down and play in the league from the professional teams certainly would appreciate that development. It was one of the hardest things when I was a player. It's like, you know, offseason comes around and they're basically like, hey, we'll see you when we get the offseason program started up. Okay, what do you want me to do this offseason? Oh, then, you know, just do what you do. And it's like,
yeah, well,
damn, how am I going to get better? Like, give me a plan. And at least they would have a plan down there. And it would give the buy-in to the fans, which is the point that you're making. Like,
yes.
I know Browns fans would just love anything that had to do with watching some of the guys that could be contributors for them in the spring. They would eat it up.
They had 53 guys at rookie minicamp 2 weeks ago. 53. Okay. Think about that depth of talent that is an NFL camp rather than being on a UFL team.
Mm-hmm.
Because the better chance is to be on a, you know, make somebody see you in a rookie minicamp.
Right.
And hopefully you get seen. But none of those guys are playing in the UFL. That's where your talent discrepancy is. It's the middle. The bottom of the middle is all in the NFL on practice squads.
Yep.
And they're all in these type of things, and they're not playing in this league. And maybe if there was some sort of partnership, they could be. And I think the NFL, I know NFL coaches would love it. I know that for a fact. When you guys think Memorial Day, what's the spread? What's the ideal Memorial? Were Memorial Days big for you guys as kids?
Any opportunity to do a little cookout and have some people over, we were going to capitalize.
We as we got older, like out of high, like it towards end of high school and right out of high school, my buddy's dad's house, you know, mm-hmm. that was our hangout place, and we would have big parties on the Sunday of Memorial Day. We had mm-hmm. a pool, a hot tub, plenty of room.
Oh, nice.
So
yeah.
We would have. I'll send you some pictures of the counter back in the day of some of the things that were consumed.
All right, let's build a master's. Here's the task. We're going to build a master-style Memorial Day dinner. Now, you can either have this Sunday. I like your Sunday plays the right play, Bake, by the way, because then you can tie one on a little bit and you've got a chill Monday.
Yep, and then you can have leftovers.
Yeah.
Bingo.
That's a win. I like the Sunday plan. All right, what would be, you get two apps for your Memorial Day cookout. What are your two apps? What are you going with?
All right, in honor of the community. Black community. Got to have some deviled eggs somewhere on the spread. It's a big one for me, so I'm going to do that. And then I've become a fan of the Skyline Chili Dip as of late. Tyvis is looking at me right now.
What's a Skyline Chili Dip?
So you put the chili
in there. Look
at him in
there disrupting the show.
He's so disruptive.
You got your own show. You did 3 hours.
He's,
you probably got six more podcasts to tape.
All right. So you get you put cream cheese on the bottom.
Yep.
Skyline chili on top of that, and then you put some cheddar cheese on top. It's real simple. You could do some
like
scallions if you'd like to. We do tortilla chips with it. It's a win. It's easy. It's comfort food. It's delicious.
Bake apps.
All right, so I'm going mac and cheese and corn on the cob.
These are not apps. Those are mains. Those are sides.
Those are not sides. Those are apps.
Mac and cheese is not an app.
There, Joshua.
Out of here.
Trying to get into this show too.
Knocking me over in here.
First of all, Bake, disallowed. Mac and cheese is not an app unless you're going to have it like mac and cheese bites.
I mean, I think that's an app.
Mac and cheese. So you at your house, somebody walks in with a platter of mac and cheese, you're like, perfect app.
Yeah, I'm all in, especially on a holiday cookout. Yes.
I think I'm on both sides with this one.
I think that's a side.
Mac feels a little bit, yes. It feels like it goes with the main
dish.
We don't
even have sides on here, so.
That's true. Fair. That's a bad job out of me. Apps, I would go. I've deviled eggs would certainly be something that was always omnipresent. I like a charcuterie.
Yes.
But to be different from Joshua, I'll take the deviled eggs off. So I'm going to go charcuterie, and I'm going to go, I take the Lipton beefy onion soup mix.
Yes, you do.
In with sour cream and then with like a kettle chip.
Yes, you
so
do.
So we'll do that. That's how we'll roll that. All right. You get a soup or a salad. What's the soup or a salad choice, Joshua?
I do a pasta salad that people rave over. I'm making it this weekend, as a matter of fact, for an event I'm going to. So I'm going with the pasta salad.
Personally, I like soup, but I have no use for it at a cookout. And I'm not a big salad guy. So let's go fruit salad for the salad.
You're not That's a big salad easy. Guy.
No. And we didn't climb to the top of the food chain to eat rabbit food. Come on now.
We got a ruling from Threes. Mac and cheese, not an app from Threes. So
I can't argue with Threes.
You're not going to argue with that guy. All right. So my buddy Homer Rutan, who was I met down in Tallahassee, he was on the first like 10 Apollo missions. Great dude. Somehow I got to know him a little bit. Incredible guy. Rocket scientist, literally. He introduced me to this salad, and it always hits this time of year. So it's spinach. It's spinach, blueberries, strawberries, apples, cheddar cheese, and poppy seed dressing. So I always do that for this time of year. What is your main? We need a main, Mr. Perry.
Barbecue chicken. So I'm going chicken thighs. I'd like an open flame, but I've done them on the griddle before. The barbecue sauce, I like something a little bit more mustardy, maybe vinegary, but it caramelizes really well, and we're off and running.
Bake? I mean, I'm just the classic here, burgers and dogs. It's all you need.
I'm ribs.
Oh, man. Doing it big time.
Ribs up. I do the ribs, man. Slow cook them. My wife does these great can of beer in there. Slow cook them, low temp, long hours, and then finish them on the grill, caramelize them up. Makes my mouth water right now thinking about it. All right, so I'll go that. And then dessert. It's probably just a whiskey, honestly.
Good for you, honestly. I mean,
probably where I'm going.
I mean, that's all day, right?
Well,
dessert all day, man.
That's evening. Joshua, you got a dessert?
Yeah, Neiman Marcus cake. So it's a yellow cake. It's got this cream cheese topping on it. It's good warm. It's good cold. If you pop it in the refrigerator, it's a hit.
Give me some brownies. Maybe throw a little ice cream on top. Perfect.
No one ever got hurt with a warm brownie with vanilla ice cream.
It's a great combo. Did.
Yeah, that always wins.
Just Tyvus's waistline.
Well, Tyvus probably doesn't eat those.
Apple, I'm sure he doesn't. Apple pie, warm apple pie with ice cream works as well. That's pretty undefeated. All right, coming up next, a shocking, shocking tragedy in the sports world. We'll reflect next. Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
We used to have a billboard with our host's face on it, but only ugly people work here now.
You mama say you ugly, hey!
The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Put more money.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Resident gambling degenerates Dave Biddle and Scotty Vegas for On the Money. Sunday mornings at 9.
Presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Columbus.
Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-589-9966.
The Fan.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Patriot Air Comfort Systems and Bryant.
Doing whatever it takes to keep your home comfortable.
The Fan.
They've all been paid by the Cleveland Browns. This is Bishop and Friends.
So from 2001 to 2007, spring of 2007, I covered every NASCAR race in Florida. Covered Talladega once, and spent. We'd go to Speed Weeks for a week, and so you got to know a lot of these guys who raced in NASCAR. And that was probably, looking back, it was probably the peak of the sport. And this is it's odd, but it's probably true that the passing of Dale Earnhardt, which happened in February of 2001, was the catalyst for that. That incredible tragedy, the loss of Dale Earnhardt, led to this incredible boom of popularity in the sport and the awareness, and that tragedy just absolutely broke the sport. But Junior was there, and the next time they were at Daytona in July of that year, Junior won, and I was there for that, and it was one of the more cathartic experiences that I can remember. And so in doing that, I got to know a lot of these drivers, not know them as if buddies or anything like that, but just familiarity with them because I was at all this stuff for a lot of years. And in 2000, and I think it was 2005, pretty sure, Kyle Busch came to Leon High School in Tallahassee, Florida to do a safe driving seminar for students there. And so I went and I saw him and I'd interviewed Kyle a few times. And in the loss of, after the loss of Dale Earnhardt, there was this feeling because Earnhardt was the intimidator. He was all of this stuff and they were looking for personalities. And Kyle kind of was willing to play like this role of a heel. He was very willing to do it. But when I interviewed him and talked to him at this event at Leon High School in Tallahassee, you were like, oh, this is not really who he is. He's actually like one of the nicer guys you're ever going to find. And he's playing a role because that was the role that I think NASCAR needed at that time. And so when I saw the news last night, first of all, I've lost track of NASCAR. I don't watch it anymore. I don't follow it anymore. I couldn't tell you who won the Daytona 500. I couldn't tell you who's leading the points. I know Jordan's having a good year with his team, but I couldn't give you a whole lot of point of reference on that. It's something I've just lost track of a little bit, but certainly remember Kyle quite well. And when I saw the news last night that he passed, shock. I had no idea that there was illness. I had no idea that he was only 41 years of age, which is even more stupefying for me. That he was just that young after all these years, which leads you to, I mean, he had to have debuted it at the time it was the Winston Cup. Well, it probably wasn't Winston. I can't remember what it was called at that time. But he had to debut at that as a teenager. And he would have had to have. And his brother Kurt had great success too. So I was just shocked. I was shocked. I had no idea he was ill. Bake, you follow this a little closer than I do. What happened here?
So it's kind of weird. And I was watching the end of the race 2 weekends ago at Watkins Glen.
Mm-hmm.
And on the broadcast, they played audio of Kyle Busch.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the audio if you want it. But he was on the broadcast radioing to his pit crew saying, hey, can you have the Hendrick's doctor meet me after the race? And while they were talking about it, they said he's been dealing with a sinus cold all week. And they were like, well, do you want him to meet you at your car or in your bus? And he said, in my bus, I'm going to need a shot.
Hmm.
And then you didn't think really anything of it because he won the truck race last weekend.
Jeez.
And in the interview, it's really kind of, I don't know, maybe ominous, but the young lady that's interviewing him talks about him racing the trucks and say, why does this never get old? And he says, well, because you never know when it's going to be your last.
Wow.
And in the interview, like, he just looked like his face was flushed a little bit. Mm-hmm. And you could tell, like, he was taking pauses because he was out of breath some. So he had obviously been dealing with something. And then I believe it was Wednesday, it came out and they said that he was going to miss the Coca-Cola 600 this weekend due to mm-hmm. illness. And then all of a sudden you get the news yesterday that he's passed. And it's just brutal. And he was a guy, even some of the drivers, Bo,
mm-hmm.
didn't love Kyle Busch's antics because he was going to do whatever it took to win.
Mm-hmm.
But he's ninth all time on the NASCAR wins list. And if you combine NASCAR wins with truck wins and with whatever it is now, it used to be the Xfinity series, yeah. like the one below.
Yeah.
He's got the most wins all time by 34. Like, he's got 234 combined wins all NASCAR things. Richard Petty's next with 200.
Dude, he raced everything. He would race. The Xfinity thing would be like on Friday, like for speed weeks at Daytona. If my memory serves, and I'm recalling a lot here trying to, but I want to say the Xfinity stuff would be like on Friday. The trucks would be on Saturday, or maybe those were inverted. Maybe the trucks were Friday and the Xfinity was Saturday. And then he'd race the 500 on Sunday. If there was a car, he would drive it. Mm-hmm. He just loved it. It was the total passion of all of it. So shocking stuff. And yeah, what you just described there leads me to believe that maybe he knew.
Mm.
Right? I mean, that's pretty. I don't know if I want to play that. It just because of the. Maybe he's been dealing with something for a while that is much more severe and just wanted to go his own. I don't know.
Or maybe there was something severe and he just didn't realize it. He just thought he was battling a cold or whatever and it wouldn't go away.
Those guys have so many medical exams, though. They're constantly. But a certainly a sports titan gone way too soon. Kyle Busch gone at age 41. Second hour of the program up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Just when you thought afternoons couldn't get any dumber.
You fellas been doing a bit of boozing, have you?
Common Man and Timmy.
Weekdays from 3 to 6.
Your home for dumb. The Fan.
Hey, it's Common Man.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Ryan Baker. It was a rough night for the Cleveland Cavaliers as they lose to the New York Knicks 109-93. They now trail the Eastern Conference Finals 0-2. Josh Hart led the Knicks with 26. Donovan Mitchell had 26 for the Cavs. Game 3 Saturday night in Cleveland at 8. The Cleveland Guardians are hot. They've won 6 straight after beating the Detroit Tigers 3-1. Patrick Bailey, Daniel Schneeman, and Jose Ramirez all with RBIs. Joey Cantillo gets the win. The Buckeye baseball season came to an end with a 3-0 loss to Michigan at the Big Ten tournament last night. The Montreal Canadiens won game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals in the Stanley Cup playoffs. They beat Carolina 6-2. Sad news in the world of NASCAR is 2-time champ Kyle Busch has passed at the age of 41. This one's sponsored by Ramos Roofing. Request your free roof or exterior assessment today at RamosRoofingOhio.com. Ramos Roofing, reliable, local, built right.
Sports conversation that's worthy of a toast, or at least a stiff drink. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, second hour here on a Friday. Tim May coming up in 28 minutes from now. My guess is from Indy. I'm guessing he still covers that. And so you have that to look forward to, which is nice. Joshua Perry is here as well. Let me just start with this to you, my friend. How did what the Big Ten did this week with their media days sit with you?
Not well. I had a long conversation about it on a podcast that I do with Nicole Auerbach. She was out there in California. And the thing that bothered me the most, and Tony Petitti is not a guy that I dislike. I think he is a good guy. I think he's done a lot of things well for the conference. This 24-team expansion is really starting to bother me. But the way that he talked about it, like, I don't know if it was like we don't know about our own sport, or if he's just so used to his background as a professional league guy.
Yeah.
But it bothered me. Like, I don't think there is a legitimate comparison that you can make to the regular season and postseasons between Major League Baseball and college football. And a lot of that conversation was what bothered me.
The biggest difference, and this is something that's hard for people like Petitti to wrap their head around, is in American sports, all of our professional leagues are actually engineered for parity.
Yes.
They're all engineered that way. Baseball is the one where you can get around it if you're willing to spend, like, i.e. the Dodgers. But even the spending doesn't always work, i.e. the Mets. It doesn't always work. But it's engineered where if you're bad, you're going to be picking at the top. And even baseball is engineered that way. If you're bad, you're going to pick at the top. And so football, all of them are that way. And so College football has never been that way. College football is more closely aligned with European soccer, the haves and the have-nots. For 100 years, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, Liverpool, Man United, Juventus, those are the best. They've been that way for 100 years. They're always good. What's that sound like? Ohio State football? Bama?
Sure.
USC? Notre Dame? Michigan? Texas? Oklahoma? There is no parity in college football. There's never been parity in college football. And the notion that we need parity for the Minnesota-Iowa game to matter is coming from somebody who doesn't understand the sport, as far as I'm concerned. Because they play for a bronze pig.
Right.
And that one matters regardless of what the records are. Same thing with, I mean, we use Iowa a lot in this because they keep being brought up as a team that should have been in at 9-4 last year. Iowa-Nebraska is a blood feud honestly, it's kind of a manufactured rivalry.
It is.
But it's one that they cannot stand each other.
Right.
Wisconsin and Minnesota play for an axe. Like, you don't have to be trying to compete with Ohio State in order for your games to matter in November. And to me, that is where Petitti has really missed the mark here.
So
is not understanding that ecosystem that college football occupies in.
I think the only reason that the powers are trying to sell it like that is not because they genuinely think that it will help those games matter more. I have long said, and you summed it up very well, we care about these games because we care about them, right? Like, not because there are stakes tied to them. It's just because we were told when we were kids that these games were important and we just believe people. And I think folks will continue to do that. But the problem has been, and we started this and now we're trying to move everything else toward it. We have made this a postseason centric sport where, and I have talked about this every time I've gotten on a mic. For a long time, it wasn't that way. You had newspapers selecting the national champion. Then we went to a system where two teams played for it and a bunch of other teams just had a postseason game. And that was the end of it. And now that we're so focused on the postseason, we're so focused on playoffs, and now we're focused on access, they have to dangle a carrot out there for the teams that are in the middle of this thing to still want to be competitive. Because 12 wasn't enough for everybody to say that they were going to be all in, right? There were some teams that just knew that was never going to be for them. Well, 24 now makes it a little bit more palatable for some of these power schools to say, yeah, we can keep investing because if there are 24, we can make our way into this thing. So I don't actually think any of this conversation is really about what it does for the regular season. They tell us that because they're trying to sell us on it. All of this is because they want people to continue to invest because we've made the sport so focused on the postseason when it was never like that before.
Well, and what Tony Petitti's trying to do is find money.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, they want to, you work for NBC. They want to break the ESPN stronghold over this inventory. I mean, he used the word inventory 16 times.
It's what it is.
Which is all it is. I've been saying on this show for years, it's television shows.
Yep.
College football are television shows. It's what it is. And so he's trying to find money. That's all a 2014 playoff is. Here's some found money for us. And anytime I hear anything from the ACC or Big 12 saying like, oh, this will give us more opportunity. Dude, you're not getting any more chances.
It's not about you.
Not about you.
It's not.
No, there's going to be 7 or 8 Big Ten and SEC teams, and you're going to have the scraps that are left. That's the way it's going to go. We've been talking about this thing, and they had this opportunity. I think it landed pretty flat where they had this as well, considering the majority of the teams
are you
from
talking
this
about
part of the country. I'm
location,
talking about Terranea.
Or are you talking about the actual resort and how expensive it is to stay there?
Both.
I've stayed there before. It's the most beautiful property I've stayed at in the United States. It's insane.
It's up there.
That people cry poor, and then you go and spend your time out there in Terranea, which is like, it is ridiculous. It's something out of a movie.
That's what I said yesterday, JP. We talked about Ross Bjork and his comments a few weeks ago, and I didn't like him anyway because you're talking about the fans giving more, and then you do this, and it's like, that makes those stop asking the fans when you're doing this. That's crazy.
I'm not suggesting that they need to go stay at a Holiday Inn Express in Muncie, Indiana. I'm not saying that. But there are plenty of Marriott properties in the Midwest that you can stay at and get your Marriott points. There's plenty of resorts in the Midwest. You can go to French Lick. They got golf. You can go to Nemacolin in Pennsylvania. You go there. You go up to Upper Peninsula, Mackinac Island. You can do it there. There's all sorts of places in this part of the country where you could go, and the people who cover your league could get there in a car.
there's a Ramada in State College that has a conference center attached to it that I've stayed at.
Sold.
A couple of times. All you need is a place to have meetings, right? Like,
yeah.
If we're talking about optics, I mean, why not?
Yeah, and all of the places I mentioned, like you want to have golf, you want to have all that stuff, okay, fine. There's places you can do it, and your people can still get there and cover it. So I thought the look was really tough. I've been there, too. It's a stunning property, and it's, you know, it's $1,000 a night.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, did you ask Nicole how many media were there? I know Thamel was there, I know she was there, and I know Scott Docterman was there. Nobody from our beat was there.
I didn't get into that with her. I know it's a lot of the national people.
Brandon Marcello was there from 24/7, CBS. Okay.
Like, but I'm not sure how many people who cover the team beats were actually there.
I don't think there were many. Not many at all. I got this email yesterday in the email segment from R.A. Patton is the email. And he writes, it's a better way to think about the playoff. He writes, instead of viewing it as a pure 16-team bracket, think of it as the top eight automatic bids plus eight teams that have to earn their way in through playoff games. So envision this in your mind, eight byes, 16 teams playing for a right to play into a 16-team playoff. That's the way he's selling it, which is a decent way to look at it, I'll acknowledge. Automatic bids. These teams are in, no questions asked. So he used last year, it looks like, before conference champions. Ohio State, Indiana, Georgia, Texas Tech, Oregon, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, Oklahoma. Those eight are in. They all get byes. Here's where it gets interesting. He writes, the play-ins are conference-centric. Each conference runs its own two-game mini-bracket. Keep the revenue essentially replaces its conference championships games with something that actually matters naturally. The rules, seeds 9 through 20 are guaranteed play-in spots. Teams are grouped by conference. If a conference has an odd number of teams in that range, the next highest-ranked team from that conference gets pulled in. So the SEC, four teams, two play-in games. So last year, that would have been Alabama. Here we go. Two-sided. He's got a lot going on here. Alabama, Texas, Vanderbilt, and Tennessee. Those four teams playing for two spots. The ACC would have had Notre Dame, Miami, Virginia, Georgia Tech playing for two spots. The Big 12 would have had BYU, Utah, Arizona, Houston playing for two spots. The Big 10 would have had one game with two teams. So it would have had USC and Michigan playing for one spot. And then the non-power four buy-in would have been Tulane and James Madison playing for one spot. So then all six teams get reseeded, and then away you go with a 16-team playoff. Does that change it at all for you?
No. Is it? Listen, I think it's
a better way to look at it.
It's a great way to look at it.
I acknowledge that. It's still not for me, but
it's a way better way to look at it.
Think about it. I'll credit him that.
No doubt. But it just, I don't know. I feel like college football needs to slow down, right? Like it feels like there's so much that is changing. It gives people anxiety. I don't think a lot of the plans are all that popular. Like, honestly, I think the only reason the 16-team playoff is a popular model right now is because people don't want 24. But I'm not sure that there are a whole bunch of people that are saying that we shouldn't just continue with 12 for a little while. You know,
I think that would win probably.
Yeah. So
here's the problem with this scenario. That's what the regular season does.
Yeah, it does.
In the conference, that's what we talked about Iowa yesterday. They lost to USC and to Oregon down the stretch, which knocked them out of the playoff. You say, oh, USC and Michigan should play. We saw that and USC dog walked Michigan. I don't need to see it again.
Agree.
It's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. The other thing about this, and this is, Bake, you made this point earlier in the week when we were talking about it. If you open this can and get to 24, you're never putting stuff back in the can. It's only going to get bigger.
Yes.
So 24 will beget 32, which will, I mean, it's never, that part is never going to change, and now you've fundamentally changed the sport. I don't know if Petitti's politicking this week landed or not. I mean, we should be his number one constituency, right? We're in Columbus, Ohio. Like, we're the most important brand in his conference. It didn't hit for me. Now, that could just be my own prejudice towards this, that I just don't want it. And I can't hear any other way. There's no way to rationalize it for me that it would work. I'm not interested in it. So it'd be interesting to see if his politicking can work on this one.
Well, and our coach admitted it may not be best for us.
It's indifferent to Ohio State. Ohio State is not affected by it at all. 8, 12, 16, 24, it doesn't matter. They're going to be fine on all fronts. But you're going to get a lot of this. You're going to get administrators, conference commissioners. Just wait till next week with the SEC. coaches running their mouths, trying to set their agenda. One set, tried to run his mouth, did run his mouth, tried to set his agenda. It's our old buddy Lane Kiffin. We're going to have some of that for you coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
If you consider yourself a Buckeye fan, you've come to the right place.
This is your heritage sports talker and home of Ohio State Athletics, The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Hey, what's up? It's Tebow.
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
ESPN senior NFL insider Adam Schefter joins Rothman and Ice every Wednesday at 12:30. And he works blue.
Okay.
The NFL Playbook with Adam Schefter is sponsored by the Roofing Guys.
Indeed it is. The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We are going to see some heavy rain develop as we head into the afternoon and evening. Could see some localized flooding, so make sure you stay weather aware. Temperatures getting into the mid-60s with breezy winds, and then for tonight, the rain continues overnight. It will be steady, and temperatures down into the upper 50s with the breezy winds continuing. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. The uncle you never knew you had. The friends you kind of wish you didn't. This is Bishop and Friends.
Indeed it is, and we are proudly brought to you and sponsored by our great friends at Diamond Seller, your true jeweler, for nearly 80 years. I said this at the time that there was no, because of the system, because of the calendar, there was never a good way for Lane Kiffin to leave Ole Miss and go to LSU. There just wasn't. I don't blame Ole Miss for the way that they handled it. I don't know if I blame Kiffin for the way he handled it. I think he wanted to have his cake and eat it too. I understand why he would want to do it. I don't think that he's an entirely soulless bastard. I don't think that that's the case necessarily. But it obviously was brutal. For everybody involved. He was on Pardon My Take this week. Let's start with this one. Let's see. They asked Lane if he would have handled things different leaving Ole Miss.
Yeah, I think I would have just came in and said, okay, I'm leaving. I'm very appreciative of everything. You know, I spent a lot of time right there fighting to coach the team, mm-hmm. you know, trying to keep everything together. Totally respect their decision, you know, the athletic director for that not to happen. I get it. But I was trying so hard to keep that together. Like, hey, let us all coach. Let this whole thing, you know, let's see if we can go win the whole thing. And so obviously that didn't happen that way, which then created a lot of it because that was the whole night and morning of that. And then what's going to happen? And then the team meeting moved back and all the things that went with it. And then you couldn't have a normal team meeting because at that time it had, you know, gotten into all that. And then, you know, naming of Golding of the head coach. And so, I mean, I don't know how much it would have saved.
Right.
Just going in and saying, instead of trying to say, hey, I really want to coach you, hey, I'm not coaching. I'm taking the job and
right.
appreciative. But
right.
I think you still would have, you definitely would have had the airport scene and all that. And
what do you think? Was there a better way to do it?
Yes. So here's the reality. If he was going to leave, there was probably not a great way to do it. But I think he probably should have just done it early and gotten it out of the way and lived with the consequences. My biggest issue with this is what you said. He wanted to be able to leave, but he wanted to be able to do it on his own terms and trying to, you're going to be the bad guy, right? You were put in a bad situation. I acknowledge that. But at some point you have to be an adult and you have to say, I don't believe in this team in that they can win a title this year or any other year I'd be coaching them. You have to acknowledge that. And then you have.
Do you?
Well, that's what he did when he left. He was basically saying, like, if he thought that they were a contender that year and beyond, I don't think he leaves. But that was not his thought process to me.
I don't know if I can get there with you. I don't know that he thought that they couldn't win a national title.
So why would you leave? Well,
because you can win a lot more at LSU and it's a better job.
I tend to agree with that, but I
just think it's that simple. I don't necessarily. And I think what he was trying to do, of course.
So, but he was telling me you don't think they can win if you leave.
No, I don't think so. I think he was thinking the opposite, Joshua. I think he was saying we can win a national title. I would sure like to coach this team to a national title, and I'd like to be able to go to LSU and I'm done. That's what I think he was trying to do. I think if he thought that they were hopeless, he just would have said, all right, I'm out. I'll see you on down the road. I think he knew he had Trinidad Chambliss who hit. He knew he had a ton of talent on that roster. He knew that last year in college football, there was not necessarily, certainly at the time he made the decision to leave, a team that was perceived to be a super team. We didn't know that Indiana was going to do what they ended up doing all the way through that run. I think he thought, I got a foot puncher's chance with anybody here at Ole Miss. I think it was kind of the opposite. I think he was saying, I can win a national title. I'd sure like the opportunity to, but also these two jobs are not the same, and anybody in sport would acknowledge that they're not.
I don't know. I just, to me, it felt like that was an acknowledgement of where he thought they were in that moment, where he thought they would be into the future. And I think that he wanted to play the PR route of I'm with these guys, I'm all in. But once you made that decision, to me, like, you can't manage a title run and also manage all of the things you would need to do to get a new program up and running.
No. Right. That part you and I agree on. There is zero chance the way that this calendar is set up that you can do. You can hardly do run your own program
exactly.
And compete for a national title.
Exactly.
And do the portal and the and national signing day and all of, you can't even do that. I mean, that's why I harp on the calendar all the time. You can't even do that when you're staying to the level that you want to, let alone when you're leaving. And by the way, I don't blame Ole Miss either.
Yeah, if I'm Ole Miss,
kick rocks. I don't blame them either. Like, there's the door. We got a coach now. Here's your suits. They're on the floor. None of that bugs me. I think the calendar is the biggest one to blame here. Is just, if you're going to leave for another job, there's no good way to do it right now.
I agree with that.
The adults in the room put it in they made it this way.
Like, yes.
There's a million ways to fix this so that this type of thing doesn't happen. And this has been happening, which is why I'm so critical of the December signing period. This has been happening for over a decade.
Mm-hmm.
This is how Marcus Freeman got the job at Notre Dame.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, he validated it. But if Brian Kelly had to get to LSU so he could recruit.
Right.
Right. Notre Dame panics. So they're like, holy cow, if we don't promote Marcus, our signing class goes kaput. Our own roster is going to get poached by everybody. We've got to promote. Now, Marcus has delivered, no doubt. But also, like, that was a massive gamble. Was Marcus ready for Notre Dame? There was no way of knowing in the time.
Sure.
They couldn't risk it because they couldn't have their roster poached. So this has been going on since there's been a December signing period where you got to make a coaching decision in December. This goes back to LSU. This is the Les Miles LSU conundrum.
Right.
You remember this one from 07?
Yeah.
Where Les Miles has to have a press conference on the day of the SEC title game because Herb Street reports correctly that Les Miles was going to be the head coach at Michigan.
And then mutiny.
Yeah, and then Les has to go, I'm going to coach my damn fine football team, and then chaos happens around the sport. Now, all of a sudden, he wins a national title. But in 2007, Les Miles was going to go be the head coach at Michigan.
Yeah. I think the calendar puts people in a very bad spot, but I don't want that to be an excuse for how immature I think Lane Kiffin was in the way that he handled everything. And it was how drawn out it was, too, on the decision. My guy, Marty Smith, was staked out there. Like, I talked to him afterwards. I'm like, brother, did you pack an extra outfit? He's like, I didn't think I would need one. You know, like, that whole part of it, you had your mind made up. You knew what you were going to do, but you wanted to be the guy who could do everything and do both, and you didn't want to make people mad or have people be mad at you and call you names. That was never going to be a reality. Like, you leaving, period, was going to get a negative reaction, so you should have just been straight up, I'm not going to be here. You guys do what you got to do, but LSU is the better job. It's a better spot for me. I think I can win a title and many titles there, and I'm gone. Just say it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys talking about Marty Smith reminds me of hearing stories of Lascelles and AR, like, camping outside Andy Geiger's house trying to see who was going to get hired when Tressel was announced the head coach. And
yeah, Dommy had... it was between Tress and Glenn Mason were the two finalists.
My guy, Glenn.
At that time. Yeah. Those were the two finalists at that time. This much is for certain. LSU is villain you. They got Kiffin, Will Wade, who's just taken a bunch of former NBA guys, and then Mulkey are all there. And then somehow, this is how crazy it is at LSU, Coach O is back.
There's not a better beat in the country right now.
Oh, there is, it's not even close. Guys, Ed Orgeron is back at LSU. They just paid him a $17 million buyout to not coach LSU. And now he's back on the staff. You can't make this stuff up down there. You can't. It's spectacular. Absolutely spectacular. Kevin has some comments on the SEC with a tougher schedule. I want to get into it 11:20. And juxtaposed to one of the other kind of quiet things that came out of Big Ten meetings this week in terms of what the Big Ten is thinking on the schedule, what was floated. We'll get to that coming up at 11:20. Tim May in 2 minutes, Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
First Friday miracles are always better with Uncle Bo. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, it's a Friday at 10:30. Fridays at 10:30, we talk to our good buddy Tim May, the Tim May Show with Clay Hall on FanStream Sports. How many Memorial Day weekends have you spent in Indy, and are you there now?
I am not there now. You know, when you start trying to appease your wife and say you're actually going to retire, you know what I mean? Instead of chopping down the whole tree, you chop off limbs. So that when it falls, it doesn't hit the neighbor's house. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
But I spent 41 in a row, so that's a lot.
41. Are you going this weekend?
No, I am not.
You're not going to the Indianapolis 500 for the first time in four decades?
I'm regretting regretting my decision as we speak. But because everybody over there has been, you know, people I know forever begging you to come back. I mean, you know, there's people over there that know me as much for covering IndyCar as covering Ohio State football. So it's pretty funny.
Who's in the group of guys who have been to that many consecutively?
Not very many. I mean, I haven't looked for a list though, but I got to admit, I haven't.
Handful of guys.
Good buddy of mine, Bruce Martin, who I've hung out with forever. We kind of didn't like each other for a long time, but all of our guys, all our buddies from the newspapers, when newspapers started covering the Indy 500 and stuff, we ended up in the same bird's nest back there in the back of the media room, which, big, huge media room. And so we became friends, but yeah, newspapers kind of started walking away a long time ago. And now there aren't that many newspapers that can afford to do stuff. So, but there aren't that many. I would think he and I and maybe three other guys are about the club, if there was a club. I think Mario Andretti's going to end up going to more consecutive Indy 500s than anybody, though.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Last one I have for you on Indy, and then we'll do a little bit of college football with Joshua.
Who's my pick?
No, I'm not interested in that because I can't tell you that many guys are in it outside of Graham, and I'm rooting for Graham. Oh. But what?
You got to do some homework, man. Go ahead, though.
No, it's not something. I don't. I used to know, but I don't anymore. Is Rick Mears still running? What makes sell our audience on what makes the Indy 500 something that they ought to go over to see?
Well, you ought to go over and see the pre-race ceremony is unique, topped by no other pre-game, pre-race, whatever you want to call it, in the world. And it sometimes gets even better. I'm sure there'll be a moment of silence, for example, on Sunday if in fact they run Sunday, the weather ain't looking good, but, if for Kyle Busch, you know, who won a couple of races over there in the Brickyard series, boy, was that stunning news yesterday.
It was,
The passing of him, one of the great drivers of our era. But then back home again in Indiana, the playing of Taps, all these, obviously the national anthem, the flyover, usually oftentimes by, it's been all kinds of different things, but the last several years, the Thunderbirds have put on a hell of a flyover, the Air Force Thunderbirds and stuff. By the way, real quick anecdote, me and my buddy Mike Vega from the Boston Globe many, many years ago, were assigned by Eddie Gossage of Texas Motor Speedway. He used to put on a pre a pre-race dinner on Friday night before the race on Sunday. And we were assigned to escort Florence Henderson and this friend of hers, who was a widow of a former GM executive, to that dinner and stuff. Can I tell you the whole anecdote? It'll take a second.
Yeah, please.
We're coming back from it, and Florence, you know, has had a few. And so had the lady, and me and Mike were just being, you know, we were being gentlemen because, you know, you know what I'm talking about. We were just escorts. Yeah. And all of a sudden, Florence says to this lady, before she married her husband, who ended up dying, GM executive, she had dated Joe DiMaggio. Florence says to her, and what was Joe DiMaggio like? And this lady's voice dropped an octave, and she said, he was wonderful.
I bet he was.
She didn't go into detail, and we didn't want to know it anyway. You know what I mean?
You probably knew all that you needed.
I probably did know more of detail, but, you know, good anecdote.
Hey, how did the Big Ten meeting in Southern California, just the messaging, the all of it, how did it land for you?
I don't know. You know, people lost their lives in the Civil War. You know that. I mean,
yeah, lots.
Hundreds of thousands of people. But this is about as close as you can get to it from a football standpoint of where one side stands and the other side stands, if you follow my drift. And obviously one side has confessed all of their ilk, meaning the Big Ten, to push the 24. Like that's, you know, the salvation. And the other side, and I'm sure coddled by ESPN, which is pushing their side for 16. I'm talking about the Southeastern Conference. It's pretty weird. But then what would bother me in this whole situation is if they're saying that, you know, they've got ESPN, you know, and ESPN is basically, you get the indication ESPN is saying the money isn't there. The money, the advertising, et cetera, isn't there for 24, for a 2014 field. That's the indication I would get. So, but then you've got the Big Ten, which has what, agreements with every network except ESPN, pretty much. Isn't that right, Joshua? But, so they're pushing it for a reason, but I would call it an impasse right now. But you know what? I would call their bluff. I would think if because you know me, I'm for 8 or 16. But I would call their bluff and just tell ESPN, well, you keep claiming you're going to go off and do your own thing. Well, see you later, alligator. That's what I would say.
All right. So on the conversation of calling bluffs, I think it was the Iowa State athletic director, basically with the SEC threatening to break off into their own entity. They were like, we'll just do it. And if you don't, we'll do it because we're tired of all these threats. So you had that as kind of subtext there. Comes out that the Big Ten is discussing potentially another regular season conference game because of all of these changes. Do you think this is something that actually happens, and does it happen sooner rather than later?
I don't know. A lot of this stuff reminds me, if William Barrett Travis at the Alamo, remember when he drew that line with his sword and everybody's farming, you know?
You remember that, like, Joshua?
I don't remember.
Well, anyway, all these volunteers there, you know? I got in trouble for a joke I made of that one time. But it's like he keeps drawing his line in the sand a little bit closer, you know? I mean, that's what it reminds me of, a lot of bluster. At least somebody finally has stepped up and called their bluff, you know what I mean? I mean, you know, what's that old thing? You know what, or get off the pot, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what you're talking about. And the late Jim Truman, you know, by the way, it's the 40th anniversary this year of Bobby Ray all winning the Indy 500. But the late Jim Truman, you know, the owner of that team who died 11 days later, but he used to have a great line about people who would, like, just be mamby-pamby, where his line was lead, follow, or get the hell out of the way. And that's kind of what that guy was saying in a nutshell. And he's right. Most people are tired of this, you know, this stuff that goes on in the off season. But I will give college football credit for this, the SEC in particular, but also the Big Ten now. They, like the NFL, they figured out a way to have people keep talking about their sport when they're not even playing it, you know? And so that's kind of where we are in that regard. But, I mean, you can't even – They can't even agree on how big the playoffs should be, much less all this other stuff. They're all thumbing their noses for the most part at the CSC, which they helped fund and start. Mm-hmm. I mean, and like Ryan Day said, when I asked him back in the spring, you know, what's one thing you would change immediately? He goes, well, enforcement of of the things we've already agreed to would be a good start, you know, before you start doing all this other stuff. So I think he is finally, like a lot of people, he's getting tired of the rhetoric.
Tim, that's because nobody in the sport is actually worried about the sport. They're all worried about themselves.
Correct.
How do we stay alive for one more year? And none of it's long term. None of these solutions are long term. It's all Band-Aids on a hemorrhage. I mean, it's all that.
And here's the other thing. You got Ohio State with 35, 36 varsity sports. You've got Alabama and Georgia with like 20 or 21.
16, Tim.
Yeah.
Texas has less than 20. Texas.
Exactly. That's crazy when you think about it, especially the money they make, et cetera. But everybody's now feeding the fatted calf. The fatted calf is getting bigger in terms of football and of what's the demands that are being made on from a budget standpoint, et cetera. But I'm telling you, any cow or bull will tell you there's only so much grass in the pasture. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Eventually, you got to start sharing and in some form or fashion because, you know, you've got to play somebody. And you've heard me say this a million times, Bo. You know, if Georgia's going 7-5 every year and Alabama's going 7-5 and Ohio State 7-5 because they're only playing within their conference or whatever, you know, that's the fans aren't going to like that either. So it's like everybody's pushing for an NFL model, but that's not what you want. And but I don't see any indication that there's going to be this, you know, coming of a meeting of the minds on this. It's, in my opinion, in the last 3 years, they've gotten farther apart, which is unfortunate.
I could not agree with you more on all of those fronts, and they're more that Civil War analogy is apropos in this case, my friend, for many, many reasons.
But in reference to football.
I know. I'll get you out of here on this. I think there's a better than 70% chance that you end up at the Indianapolis 500.
No, I don't think it's going to happen. Especially because I think it's going to rain all day Sunday.
Okay, then you're going to go Monday.
I was planning on playing golf on Monday.
Well, I think you're going to go. I'll believe it when I see it. I'll believe that you miss it when I see it.
We'll see. I know one thing. It's going to be a hell of a race, buddy. Alex Palou on the pole. That guy, he's got it going on. But watch Felix Rosenquist from the local Meyer Shank Racing team, man. He could make a move, baby.
All right, buddy. Have a good Memorial Day weekend either way. See you, buddy.
Nice question, Joshua.
There he is, Tim.
What is wrong with that guy?
it's everything that's right about him. That's it. Mind if I tell a full anecdote? Of course. Like, what am I going to say? No. We'll do Thing or Not It Thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Winners of the prestigious Platinum Microphone Award every year, given to the best radio station in the world. No need to look it up. It's real. The Fan.
For the ones who...
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Get the Fan have created a show where you can be a homer, a hater, or whatever you want to be. Sunday mornings at 8.
It's the Fan Call-In Show, presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Columbus.
Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-589-9966.
All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. If you say something with enough confidence, it must be true. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little Thing or Not a Thing on a Friday. Hit it, Bake.
Thing or Not a Thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
All right, so on his college football show earlier this week, Josh Pate must have been talking about coaches and coaching grades, and he gave his grade for the job that Ryan Day has done or is doing at Ohio State.
Ryan Day could only be A+ if he just won the national title. He is merely an A right now because they did lose their last two games last year. Now, the year before, they did win the national title. Also, last year, they erased the streak against Michigan. So I would put him at an A. It's a model program, maybe the model program in college football. They have never, under him, finished outside the college football playoff top 7. I don't need to defend Ryan Day. There was like a brief 5-minute period in time where I had to defend Ryan Day on here, on this show, and that was post-Michigan game, pre-playoff 2024. Since then, it's been a lot easier to defend Ryan Day.
Thing or not a thing?
So here's what I noticed about Josh, and I give him a lot of credit because he gets a lot of these one-on-ones, and he gets them for 40 minutes. He can have these conversations. But I'm going to say not a thing because nothing he said there was new information. He basically does. I notice this is like what my kids watch on YouTube.
Yep.
Like somebody will come on and just say, they'll just say, Michael Jordan is the greatest basketball player of all time. He won 6 MVPs. He won six titles, 5 MVPs, all this stuff. And then my kids are just transfixed by it. I'm like, well, that's all he's doing is just saying facts. Like, those are all just facts. Everything about Ryan is just a fact. That's all that is there. He can't be an A+. He didn't win his last two games. He won a national title. Yeah, we know all of that. Maybe model program. Yeah, we know all of that. Like, there's nothing that's new in any of that. So I'm going to say not a thing. Yes, it is a model program. Yes, Ryan Day's an A. All of those things are kind of no-brainers.
Yeah, I'm going to go with not a thing as well. And I listen to Pate. I respect the platform that he's built up. It's, huge. But this is kind of the shtick with him as well. Like, I don't think he criticizes coaches very much. And I don't know how much new information there is. Like, yeah, Ryan Day is an A. I tend to agree with that. Not a thing.
I think the thing here, too, with this that makes it not a thing is who cares what, and I like Josh Pate as well. Who cares what Josh Pate or Joshua Perry or Bo Bishop or Ryan Bay, who cares what any of us say like about this and grade the coach?
Remember where the bread's buttered? Easy.
They continue at Ohio State to be the model program in college football. And as long as they're winning football games, that's all that matters.
Yeah, that's true.
The University of Georgia men's basketball program is getting a $10 million boost from the founder of one of the nation's largest daily fantasy companies, Adam Wexler, who's a Georgia alumnus and founded the leading fantasy operator Prize Picks, is donating $10 million to the Bulldogs basketball program. It's the largest philanthropic commitment by a single donor in Georgia Athletic Association history, according to the school, and it will support personnel and operating expenses within their men's basketball program. Wexler, who's an 07 grad from Georgia, told ESPN that basketball has always been his favorite sport and that he hopes the Bulldogs can build on the momentum from the last couple of years under Coach White. They've made the NCAA tournament the past two seasons. Thing or not a thing?
Here's what I'd like to know. Adam Wexler's his name?
Yep.
What would he consider to be a solid ROI on his $10 million? What's his minimum thing that would please him about giving $10 million? This is just to the basketball program, right? So that'll pay for what, half the roster? This is what $10 million will pay for, or probably two players?
Yeah, it says personnel and operating expenses, so maybe this is some going to NIL, some going to coaches. Who knows? Yeah.
What do you think is a reasonable return on investment on giving a bat? Let's just act like this was, let's say instead of Wexler, it's Wexner, and it's $10 million to the Buckeye basketball program. What does $10 million buy you of an accepted ROI on that for a basketball program that is not a traditional power?
I have no idea. Like, what, I guess, like, what were they working with beforehand in terms of investment? Like, what's around them? I don't know. I really don't. Like, I think half the time these guys are, you know, they're expecting, like, you make a Sweet 16 or whatever the case is. But, like, I think it comes down to what their pride level is as well. You know,
it's like, what is, so what does $10 million get you?
I don't know. I have no idea.
I don't know either. Is it like, well, look, if you don't make the Sweet 16, I guess my point is,
how far did they go this year?
I didn't think they make the tournament. Maybe they did.
No, they were in the tournament.
Were they in it?
I think they lost in the first round.
Okay, so let's say then that you get to a Sweet 16. Like, this dude's probably feeling good because he can go around saying, I built the Sweet 16 Georgia Bulldogs.
So that's it, right? That's the brag. I agree with you. It feels like that's the minimum. I would also tell you, here's kind of a dirty little secret. I don't think $10 million is going to make much of a difference.
Well.
For 1 year?
Yeah.
You better hit.
Yeah.
Because then you're going to have to do it again next year.
That's the other part about it that nobody talks about. And by the way, like, we're talking ROI is if there's, like, actually a return here. Like, the return is your pride and the return is a pat on the back. You're not getting anything out of this financially.
No, this is blue chips.
Yeah.
You've seen blue chips. I mean, this is happy from blue chips. Like, I got you your point guard. I got you Butch. I got you Ricky Rowe. Go win me some damn games. That's it.
Where are we at with this being a prize picks money, right? Like, so if there was a guy in Winston-Salem who had big tobacco money that wanted to donate to Wake Forest, like, how would we feel about that compared to how we feel about prize picks over here?
It doesn't matter to me. I don't care about that part. I don't care where the money's from.
It's an interesting spot in society.
It is, yeah.
Georgia, by the way, lost to St. Louis 102-77 in the first round of the NCAA tournament in an 8-9 matchup. Also, maybe the biggest return on investment for Mr. Wexler is a tax write-off.
Yeah.
Tom Brady, he was given a commencement address at Georgetown University, and he said something that many are taking as a shot at Texas Tech.
We called the play. It was a little squirrel. We called the play. It was a little square out to Danny Amendola. Danny went undrafted out of Texas Tech. He was cut by three NFL teams. He wasn't the tallest. He wasn't the fastest, but he had a huge heart. And he played his ass off in the biggest moments. And I hope you guys find colleagues like Danny. Having business school friends are great. Don't get me wrong. But sometimes you need a kid from a glorified community college who can bail your ass out of any jam.
Thing or not a thing.
Boy, Texas Tech taking strays.
I guess so.
At a commencement.
Bad week for Tech.
Jeez. That's fun thing. Good for Brady. He's had an awkward post-playing career.
Mm-hmm.
Very awkward. Yeah. But that's a good line.
I don't like his cadence. I didn't like the delivery one bit, but it was a hell of a line.
It certainly seemed like he was, obviously, he was reading.
Yeah. It gave me Fernando Mendoza vibes, as a matter of fact. And now those two are going to be, thick as thieves. So it makes a lot of sense.
JP, I've said every time I watch Fernando Mendoza, I think of Tom Brady running that 40 at the combine.
All right. Final hour of the program coming up next. We kick it off with what we learned. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
T-Bone and Tyvis are everything you want in a delicious breakfast. Lots of empty calories, no nutritional value.
Weekday mornings from 6 to 9.
The Fan. Always still look at my...
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Ryan Baker. The Cleveland Cavaliers in a 2-0 hole in the Eastern Conference Finals. They lose to the Knicks 109-93. Josh Hart led 5 in double figures for New York with 26. Donovan Mitchell led the way for the Cavs with 26. Game 3 Saturday night in Cleveland at 8. The Cleveland Guardians have won 6 in a row. They complete the 4-game sweep of the Detroit Tigers, winning 3-1. Patrick Bailey, his second home run as a Guardian. Joey Cantillo pitched 5 2/3 for the win. The Buckeyes baseball season came to an end with a 3-0 loss to Michigan at the Big Ten tournament. The Montreal Canadiens won Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals in the Stanley Cup playoffs, beating Carolina 6-2. Hockey World Championships right now. Canada leads Slovenia 1-0 after one. Denton Matejchuk has the goal. This one's sponsored by United Dairy Farmers. Try UDF's new ice cream quake flavors for the summer, only for a limited time.
Our top men are working on everything. Except this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour here on a Friday. The Big Ten floating out an expanded conference schedule. Yeah, you heard that right. Lane Kiffin taking shots as well. That's coming up in about 15 minutes from now. We kick off the final hour with what we learned this week.
We're not trying to do too much around here, but over the course of 5 days, you might have gleaned some stuff. Bishop and Friends present What We've Learned This Week.
Sponsored by High Bank Distillery Co. Make a reservation today at highbankco.com. Dine, drink, distill at High Bank.
Joshua Bake, I think when I look back on the week, the story that we probably talked about the most was the Big Ten meetings out in Southern California. And I think what we learned is the Big Ten probably had an opportunity. I think their intention was right, because I've been asking for this for a long time. Like, invite the media to your meetings, to your spring meetings, the way that the SEC has done years ago. And we found out, we learned this week that, to the surprise of probably nobody here, that Paul Feinbaum was the first one to do it. And he just requested to go to the spring meetings of the SEC 20-some years ago in Birmingham. And then now it's become this circus that it's become down there. But what it allows for them to do is to get their messaging out correctly. So the Big Ten, I think what I learned this week is they got the first part right. They finally said, hey, come on out. We're meeting. We'd love for you to join us. The part that they got wrong is the majority of their teams are in the Eastern or Central time zone, and the majority of their teams continue to be located there, and they had their meetings on the West Coast at a really posh resort that much of the beat did not go to. And Joshua, you talked to Nicole. She was out there. You're all in on this. The network that you work for is all in on this. To me, this was a little bit of, they got some of it right, but not all of it. And I think that was a bit of a fail for them, because I think there was an opportunity to really pound their chest and get their messaging out. And I'm not sure they all the way delivered on that.
You know, it's like when you're getting work done on your house and you have service provider there and you ask them, well, you know, here's the plans. We want to do this, this, and this. Hey, but can you add a little bit of this on top? And they're like, well, we can do anything for you. It's going to be another $6,000, because they don't really want to do it. Yeah. That's the, yeah, oh, you're invited, come out here, but also this is where we're staying and this is how far away it is from all of you people, and best of luck getting out there. I thought that was it was bad optically. I wish there were more people there. I would say the other part too is with some of the comments from the commissioner and kind of coming out of his corner guns blazing, it would have been nice to have more of a contingency that could push back on some of the ideas and the rationale, really, that he was floating out there for the ideas.
I don't even think this was on the Big Ten Network.
No, I think they had Rick Pizzo out there, and it looked like he had a setup with two director's chairs. So I'm sure there was some sort of sit down. I don't know where, when it's airing. I couldn't tell you that, but they had somebody out there, but it wasn't its own standalone show.
It wasn't. They didn't take it live, though.
No, they didn't.
They didn't do like 2 hours live out there.
No.
During the week where you got like all of the athletic. Like, sure. Paul was on with us on Thursday, and he's like, look, this is how this is going to go. I've been doing this for 100 years. The first day that we're there, I'm going to get all the coaches. The next day that I'm there, I'm going to get all the administrators. And then the last guy to talk on my show is going to be Sankey.
Mm-hmm.
The Big Ten did not have that.
No.
So you didn't take advantage of it the way that you could have. It's a small step in the right direction. But in what this is now is a completely public PR battle that's being fought by these two conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a chance, I think. I just think you got to do it. It's okay. Imitation sometimes can be the greatest form of flattery. Just imitate them.
Right.
You guys love Indy so much? Fine. Just do it in Indy. They got a great JW. Now it's Indy 500 week, so maybe they didn't want to have any part of that.
Do it in Chicago.
Do it in Chicago. Chicago's great. Although I don't love the traffic. Yeah, Chicago's great. I
heard you talk about that the other day.
Oh, dude. You just can't get around that city.
It's fine.
You live there. So let's take a quick diversion. Do you see any scenario how the Bears can put and I saw this story this week as well. Kevin Warren, our old buddy, saying, look, like, this is either going to, we're done with Chicago. Like, city of Chicago's done. We're not there. It's either going to be northern suburbs or Indiana. Is there any scenario that you could put a Bears stadium south of the city?
Because
I don't buy it. You live there.
Yeah.
I don't buy it.
I mean, it's difficult getting around anywhere. Now, what they will tell you is that would be worst case scenario for season ticket holders, because most of them live north of the city in those suburbs.
Yeah.
Right? So they're going to have a hell of a time trying to get to Indiana. But for a typical Bears fan that's buying a one-off game ticket, that's probably the best case scenario, because so many of them already live south of the city anyway.
Okay. How do you, like, if you live, so it's Arlington Heights.
Mm-hmm.
It's where they're going, former Arlington racetrack.
By the way, never made my way out there when I lived in, like,
You live downtown, right?
Yeah, and I would go out to Oak Brook to go to the mall because my wife likes to shop, and that was probably the furthest that we would leave the city.
By the way, crazy that I saw this week as well, and I know this is going on because it happened here in town, but they closed the Saks Fifth Avenue on Michigan Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that stunning?
Yeah,
it is. Somehow that, we've reached a point where that happened.
I mean,
crazy.
Yeah. It's expensive, though. People like to shop online now.
I guess they do.
Yeah.
Bo, I'm going to go back to the Big Ten meetings and getting the message out and how, yeah, they kind of missed the boat here with where they're doing it and all of that. You also, there's a little bit of mixed messaging here because you say it doesn't work financially. Like, if that's your motive, and we all know, just keep pushing that. And then you say, well, nobody ever complained about this in Major League Baseball. BS. I remember it being a big thing to the baseball purists when they went to wild cards, and then they expanded the wild cards. And also, the sport of baseball, in general, is dying.
Yeah, it is.
People aren't watching it. They don't want to give it TV contracts. You can't watch your own team. So, quit trying to, well, baseball didn't care. Well, what do you want to do? Do you want to kill the sport? Like, what's happening in baseball?
Yeah, the regular season stinks.
And then the other thing for me is don't bring up Iowa in this and talk about, well, Iowa's games would mean more at the end of the year. We brought it up. They had two back-to-back at the end of the year with Oregon and USC. And if they win one of them, definitely, if they win both of them, they're in the college football playoff. If they win one of them, maybe they're in the argument and trying to get in there. Don't tell me, oh, well, they can lose both of them and be in this expanded playoff, and that makes those games more important.
No.
You're just contradicting yourself with that.
They're worried about the Iowas of the world losing their incentive to want to continue to invest. That's the whole idea of access and expansion. They are justifying it by trying to tell you that there are certain things that are going to matter more in the regular season, but the whole thing that they are trying to do is keep those teams that are consistently like middle class college football, never really have been good enough to win it all. They want to keep them engaged in spending, engaged in being competitive. So when they go and sell the contracts, when everybody's like, well, because I say this all the time, you're basically paying for a conference championship game, which is getting ready to leave. You've got a game like Ohio State, Michigan. You get Ohio State, Oregon, Ohio State, whatever it is, right? Not many games after that are the TV networks really paying for. They want to try to incentivize those teams to keep getting better so they can go ahead and sell it one day.
You know the crazy, and I think you're right, that's what they're trying to do. What the big picture, what they're trying to do is find money. That's the number one thing. But then the next thing is what you said. It's honestly, I think it's the opposite, though. Because why would I need to spend any more if I'm Iowa? I'm in now, and I went 9-4. Like, in fact, if you now don't really have to, you can spend less. Like, there's no reason for you to spend a lot. 24 teams are getting in.
Right. I think
all you got to do is go 8-3, and I'm getting in. If I'm in a Big Ten and I go and I have three conference losses, I'm making the 2014 playoff. We're making it. So, I would almost argue that if they made it more exclusive, then that would cause the folks that really want to chase this thing to spend more to get to the more exclusive level would be my counter to that. I'm not disputing what you're saying.
No doubt.
Because what you're saying is exactly what they're trying to sell you on, but I don't think that it's true at all.
And we've talked about Iowa a lot, and I don't want to pick on Iowa because Iowa's been a pretty good football program for a long time. That's just the example that Pat Fitzgerald used. Bo, I think you're right. You don't want to have teams battling to be 24.
No.
You want to inspire Indiana's that say, if we want to get in this thing, we have to be good enough. We have to spend money. We have to use our resources. We have to get a great coach. And I don't want to pick on PJ Fleck, but, well, we can get PJ Fleck and be 24 and be just fine.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I think that's exactly what will happen. There will be less pressure to be elite with 24 teams getting in, much less, because you're going to get in. You're in the Big Ten. Eight of you are going to get into this thing every year, which is just stupefying. Now, while all of this was going on, this kind of came in under the radar. The Big Ten could be rethinking how they play conference football. We will get to that, and Lane Kiffin has some thoughts on the difference between the SEC and the Big Ten as they continue to move the goalposts. We'll get to all of that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Head to 971thefan.com to listen on demand and subscribe to all our podcasts. Wasting time has never been easier. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Care Heating and
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah.
they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
The Reds are on the Fans' family of stations all season long. If you don't listen, Terry Francona will ride his scooter to your house and yell at you. Your home of the Reds. The Fan. The Fan 2 and the Fan 3. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We are going to see some heavy rain develop as we head into the afternoon and evening. Could see some localized flooding, so make sure you stay weather aware. Temperatures getting into the mid-60s with breezy winds, and then for tonight, the rain continues overnight. It will be steady, and temperatures down into the upper 50s with the breezy winds continuing. For the Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. The show that understands the importance of a situational beverage. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, this one snuck in. You gotta be, this Ross Dellinger, you got to be on it. He's got to be your white whale. I think he's plugged into everything. We got to get him on this show. Like, he is... These sneaky tweets, they come out of nowhere, and it's got information that no one's had before. And here's one. This is an example. This was him yesterday, a little after 5 o'clock. A nugget here. The Big Ten discussed with its football coaches earlier this week the idea of playing 10 conference games, something that looms as the league and the SEC explore self-governance models. They should play 10 conference games. This league at the bottom has teams that are by game. All leagues do. This one just got a few more. There's some real bottom feeders in this league that can definitely take the place of MAC opponents or Marshall or any of those. The Big Ten should play 10 games in the conference and keep all of that money to themselves. They could probably get a new television deal by doing it, by saying we're going to deliver 10 conference games every year. I don't think it should impact the way that Ohio State schedules Texas, Alabama, and Georgia. My hope is that it wouldn't, but it might. But you got enough teams in this league, and it's going to get bigger before it gets smaller. It's never going to be contracted. So I see no issue why the Big Ten wouldn't consider playing 10 conference games.
I agree with you on that in terms of what that schedule would look like. It would be important to stay aggressive with the available non-conference. Like, of course, you get your little FCS in there, but I'd like to see another major player on there, even though you've got more conference teams that you have to play. But my thought goes to the implication of what this all means in the grand scheme with self-governance. And the SEC has been really chessy lately about mm-hmm. this idea of doing their own thing and you know, writing and enforcing their own rules. And what does that mean for, you know, we're talking about all the postseason stuff. Like, okay, so does you do your own thing and then does everybody come together and still play in the same playoff at the end of the year? Are teams from the ACC or from the Big 12 going to schedule a team from the SEC or the Big 10 in these scenarios? Like, I think about the big picture and how this actually works out.
I'll tell you right now that you guys are from up here and I'm not from either place. If the SEC just held their own party and just played each other and their national champion was the SEC champ, that's their quote national champion, I think a majority of the constituency down there would be fine with it. I really do. Now, you could say, well, they've lost three in a row. Of course, they'd be fine with it. Okay, that's probably true too. But I saw the comments from the Georgia president about maybe doing our own thing with enforcement and rules and all of that. And by the way, the irony of somebody at Georgia saying they're going to enforce rules. They can't enforce speeding tickets, for God's sakes. And now we're going to worry about that. But I'm telling you, they would. And in a way, if that happened and they did their own thing and the Big Ten did their own thing, in a way, it'd be going back to college football's roots.
Yeah.
Because you rarely saw teams from down there play teams from up here. Rarely. And the national champion was voted on.
Right.
Because it wasn't figured out on the field. It was, I think these guys look better than these guys. Let's vote on it. And that's your national champion. If it came to that, I do think that conference would be okay with it. Would we?
That's the hard part. I feel like the Big Ten is so, you know, what's best for the sport holistically. yada, yada, yada. I don't know. I mean, I could see if that was a world where the SEC did their own thing. I could see the Big Ten following suit, and then you get basically your AFC and your NFC, and they could probably play each other in a postseason kind of round robin, and then the championship game's a championship game. I could see a format like that. But it goes on further to, you know, how is that such a drastic change that people's viewing habits holistically of the sport change? Obviously, you'll tune in to watch your own team, but are you now as bought into watching a day of college football as you were in the past?
No, probably not.
Can you do this and have it only affect your football programs and not all of your other programs? Like now, because football is doing its own thing, do people say, okay, well, like, track, you're frozen out too. Like, you can't compete in these invitationals and do that whole thing. It's a lot to bite off.
Well, and that's what the Iowa State AD said.
Yep.
And he was like, good luck, you know, just playing each other in baseball and volleyball and everything else.
You could do all of it just fine. You just would have to, as fans, get used to more losses. That's really it. I don't think that there's any sort of, like, if you're either the Big Ten or the SEC and you played an entirely conference schedule, you just would have some more losses in there is all it would be. You'd have less cupcake games. But you could, and look, here's the other thing. The SEC, it would be cleaner for them to do it because they are completely in bed with ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
So quite frankly, guess who else is completely in bed with ESPN? The ACC.
Right.
You could easily, the ACC and the SEC could go to ESPN and just say, hey, let's just do our own little club here. Let's carve out our own little club and we'll just play each other and we'll do our own tournament and it'll be the Southern Comp, the Southern Football Championship or whatever. Like they have it. I know you're shaking your head, babe, because you know how true all this could be. but the reality is, like, I do believe that the folks down there would be more than fine with that.
Delusional
as that is, I believe that they would be.
You're probably right that they're totally fine with that, Bo. And I just, oh my gosh, like when you were just said that, like that maybe that's what's wrong with college sports here is that they're being run by the television networks now.
They are.
And we talked about private equity before and how Ohio State needs to stay away from that. This is why, because you say, oh, it's no big deal. We don't want any part of the ownership here. We're just BS. When you're putting that kind of money in, you want to say, and then you're ran by a higher entity than you.
They're allowing themselves to be run by networks, though, because they're so thirsty for the money. It goes back to Bo. You make the point every time, and I think it's really important. Like, all of this is because people are trying to squeeze every single cent they can out of inventory. But when you do that, you're basically at the whims of what the executives over with the networks want you to do. That's a choice that that athletic directors and university presidents and decision makers, commissioners are making right now.
Yes. Yeah, they are. And then it will come down to what I think is going to be really fascinating. We just had the Big Ten in Southern California for a week, and we saw the way some of that was painted. Next week, it'll be the SEC's turn to kind of push their agendas. And there are a few people better at pushing an agenda than Lane Kiffin. He was on Pardon My Take and explained the difference between the Big Ten and the SEC. Pay attention to the ever moving of the goalposts here.
I think it's set up in a good way for the top heavy teams there right now. I think now, and it's going to get better. We're going to 9 games and our bottom is harder than theirs. Okay. And our bottom stadiums, you know, are harder than theirs. So we're going to beat each other up more, and they're going to sit up there and have 2-3 hard games a year, you know. And so their top teams and our top teams, when they go to the playoffs, okay, they're in better shape.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff matters. You know, it's why, like, I've always been a proponent to stay at 8 games and let us make our own whoever we want to play in knockout. Don't tell us who we have to play.
Right.
And we would do, like, the model of the last place I was just at. Look at our – we went 20-0 in non-conference regular season games at Ole Miss, 20-0. We didn't play any of them big, like, openers. This place went, in a 4-year span, lost 3 of 4 openers.
Yeah, they played hard games at the openers.
So you played, yeah, that's so great, whatever. Well, you don't get rewarded for it because it's not worth it enough in the strength. But also, that schedule where half your games you don't have to get up for, it's just it's a mental toll that you got to play when you're getting up for. Plus also, man, your good players are out by the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. So your play count at the end of the year is less. One of the really good teams there rested a couple of their good players in conference games at the end of the year.
And that's referring to us, isn't it?
I think so.
Pretty
with
sure.
Carnell and Jeremiah. Tate.
Yep.
Careful. Sitting out the
lane
in November. I mean, speaks some truth.
What's the truth?
Well, the truth is that when you have a bigger league and you have several entities that don't really care about football, mm-hmm. and this is why I said a 10-team conference in a Big Ten actually works, because you have the Purdue's of the world and you have the Rutgers of the world and sure. you have the Maryland's of the world that are complete bottom feeders. They got bottom feeders too, and this is the part he gets wrong. He's confusing passion with quality.
I agree.
That's where his discrepancy is. And you've done some of these games. You've been in College Park, and you've seen
oh, yeah.
half empty stadiums. You've seen some of these games. You will not get that in Starkville.
Right.
You will not get that in Arkansas.
Sure.
Now you can say that's delusional, and maybe it is. But you're not, so he's confused. Now, that does not necessarily mean that those are quality football teams. They're not.
No.
Their league is smaller, so they don't have quite the fat that this league has. But he's confusing environment, passion, scene with quality. That's what I think he's doing.
I'm going to tell you what bothers me the most about this particular talking point. And it seems like a lot of the coaches have adopted this. Kirby was talking about this maybe a month ago.
Yep.
Nobody was bitching about this when they were winning championships. So what is it? Because it was a benefit to you that your conference was so tough and so deep when everybody was winning. But now all of a sudden you haven't won a title in a little while. And well, you know, it's such a grind for us and our guys are banged up and our conference is so tough. We'll pick a stance because I've
heard
both.
That's moving the goalposts.
Yeah.
That's what they did. They moved the goalposts on that.
And here's the truth, and this is not from me or anybody in a Big Ten affiliation. This is from Alex Scarborough, who covers Alabama for 24/7. Something to consider as we talk about the grind of SEC versus Big Ten and who's better rested for the title run. Entering the playoff last year, Indiana 21 had more players with 500-plus snaps than Georgia 16 or Alabama 15.
Yeah, no, that part makes absolutely no sense. But they will get organized. Both of these coaches, I mean, that's why this is so political.
Yep.
Right? We've heard our coaches politicize the 24. You hear their coaches talking about this stuff now, about that. And the reality is if Lane Kiffin were telling the real truth, and this is why he's at LSU, most of those schools down there don't have the money that the schools up here do.
No.
That's the real truth. That it's Texas, LSU, Texas A&M, probably Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, the other powers down there, they're all having to do it Netflix style.
Yeah.
They don't have one booster who can swoop in and write a big check. They don't have that. And that's what leveled the playing field. It's the money leveled it. Now all the stuff they were doing under the table, we can all do above table.
Yeah, and that's what allowed for it. It's not $20,000 anymore either. It's $2 million
now.
It's
$2 billion. Yeah, of course.
Right.
Of course. Doug, in 2 minutes, Bishop and Friends, right here on the...
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
The best hair on the air.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
It's Friday. It's 11:30. We talked to our good buddy, Doug LaMaurice, the Bill and Doug Show on YouTube. The Substack is Bill and Doug, osu.substack.com. By the way, Bill just published this, the behind the scenes on how the gray got back on the sleeves. Really cool. He just published it in the last 20 minutes. Awesome. Really good stuff. So that's the type of stuff they do, the best stuff. And we appreciate Doug joining us as he always does. So Terranea, Southern California, messaging, politicking, how'd they do?
I almost don't care what they said. They just said something. And I'm so happy that the Big Ten is not sitting out the offseason and that they have now... They want the week before the SEC. They've sort of dictated the terms of the conversation. Everything the SEC will say this coming week will be in response to what the Big Ten said. The idea that, right, our some of our best college football reporters were out there reporting on this instead of them hiding from this in the past. It is, and you know, we were talking a lot about it on our show. Like, I know a lot of people don't like what the Big Ten is saying. But you know, like somebody's got to be the evil empire. And if it's the Big Ten for a little bit, I might be here for it. You know, like just fight, have a point of view, right? And it doesn't mean that everybody has to agree. And I don't think we're going to get to a world where everything Tony Petitti's saying is what happens. But you have to stand up for yourself first. And then we can get into the specifics of, okay, how are we going to figure this out? But I'm just so happy that we're talking about the Big Ten.
You and I have wanted this for the longest time. We talk about it. We just go play ball with them. Go get in their sandbox and play with them. But of course I want more. So then I come back to, well, can beat writers get out there to that place? So that some short-sighted stuff there. I'm sure they had this in the plans for a long time. I wish it was somewhere more closely geographically with us. And then the other thing, just from Petitti's standpoint, I think he needs a little PR coaching in terms of who he's representing. He used the Major League Baseball example several times about never anybody complaining about the size, but well, you're missing the point. This isn't Major League Baseball. That's not what this is.
Right.
This is not a sport where everybody kind of goes to the middle. It's not a sport that's been about parity ever. So he's some of the language I didn't hit home for me, but I guess your perspective is one that maybe I share as well, and that at least they're trying. From a newsworthy standpoint, Ross Dellinger had this late about the Big Ten. They kind of floated it to coaches about a 10-game conference schedule. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I don't know. So if it's 10, what are you losing? Are you losing? So if it's Ball State, Kent State, Texas this year for Ohio State, are you losing the Texas game? And you're going to play two MACs and 10 conference games? Or are you playing, you're losing one of the MAC games and you're still playing a non-conference banger, but you're playing 10 conference? Because if it's that, sign me up.
Yeah.
If it's you're now going to play 10 inside and then two sure wins, and we're never going to have regular season cool non-conference games, then I say no. So it depends on the specifics of it, but like the idea of, I mean, I want more good games for fans, more games that fans care about. And so, you know, like Rutgers is better than a second MAC game, right? So, but Rutgers is not better than Texas. So like, I think the specifics matter, but I'm not against it on its face.
All right, Doug. So I wanted to ask you about this because it was something that I heard was being discussed out there. It was a kind of a competition committee, like what the NFL does with their coaches. And the synthesis of this is crazy. Was everybody's pissed off about the new punt rule, and so now the coaches want a little bit more input. But how should we feel about that? Because there's one side where I agree, coaches certainly should have a little bit more input in what goes on with rulemaking and governance and enforcement. But there's also a ton on their plates already. So where would you stand on a competition committee similar to what the NFL does?
Yeah, I think it'd be good. I mean, it's like a coach is on it, but it's actually like his representative is on it. You know, like Quinn Temple could get in there for Ryan Day, right, as his chief of staff and get down and dirty about so Ryan doesn't have to be in every meeting. But there are things like the coaches matter, but what the coaches say about whether they like a 2014 playoff or not, for instance, I think that matters less because, of course, they all want to get in the playoff, right? But like the calendar, when, how should recruiting and the transfer portal and playing games, how should the calendar match up? Coaches should have a big, strong voice in that. The playing of the game, rules about plays, about punt formations, that kind of thing. Coaches should have a strong voice in that. So I do think, If you give the coaches like the opportunity to have great input on the stuff that's really about the game, and then you say, okay, like let you know the ADs and the presidents and like other people might figure out the playoff structure. I think that's a good balance. But like who knows better about fun stuff than coaches, right? So that I think I like this, Joshua.
Yeah, the other thing that we're getting, and we're going to get a lot more of this next week, but this was kind of slow rolled this week by the president of the SEC, who said, you know, we need to maybe come up with our own set of rules that we need to follow. Now, the timing on this is nice for them because they haven't played for a national championship in 3 years, and NIL has evened the playing field north and south, and in fact, tilted it this way in a big, big way. But having been down there, I think most people down there would be kind of okay with it. if they just separated. Like, that's kind of how delusional it can be down there, and they can kind of play in their own little silos a little bit. I think the president of Georgia saying that is noteworthy. I don't know if anybody up here ought to care about it, and maybe that's the next part of this. Like, if they did something like that, would we care?
So, right, so there's, are you setting your own rules, or are you having your own playoff, right?
Well, one might lead to another, right?
So if a conference says, like, well, we're going to have, our salary cap is this, or your rev share can be this, or your NIL can be this, but another conference says something different. I don't know that I think that's the end of the world. You know, I mean, like, again, like, you can't make everything a baseball analogy, but we had a DH and not a DH for a long time, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, you can have the same sport, but the idea, I mean, it's laughable to me. I don't know. I don't live in the South. Are they just more myopic down there? Like, they'd be happy of, like, I don't care.
People think I'm crazy when I say this, Doug, but they're still fighting the Civil War. Truly. Yeah, well, I mean, people think I'm nuts, but they really are. And they really think that college football was, like, the one thing that they always did better. They believed it.
Yeah. Right. So it's like, what are they going to do? What's the South going to do? Break away and do their own thing? There's no history there. What? Are they going to break? What are they going to? So, like, that idea, but, like, is ESPN cool with that? ESPN, like, is bought the playoff and is like, oh, okay, well, every playoff game is Ole Miss versus Florida now. Like, I'm not watching that. So guess what? There's, like, a lot of people in Ohio watch college football. Are you going to be excited to watch Tennessee, Texas A&M in an SEC championship quarterfinal? Like, there is part of this. I don't know that, like, the people who give them the money are so they could, have it sponsored by Piggly Wiggly and have it on the Raycom network or whatever they used to do back in the SEC days. So, like, that's fine. You could have the Piggly Wiggly playoff, but I don't know if you're going to get as much money for it as if you're actually playing Ohio State and Notre Dame and Michigan in the big thing, right? So I hope maybe TV is, like, the death of everything, but also TV when it's like, no, you're not going to do that because we have an agreement and we want to make the most money, and that includes appealing to all 50 of these United States. But the idea that it's like, we didn't win three in a row, so we're doing our own thing is like, and Lane Kiffin's out with our bottom is better. Your two solutions are our bottom is better and we're doing our own thing. It is the last gasp of a dying empire, and it makes me want to laugh in their face.
I tend to agree with that. It felt like there was a time where the SEC made statements, coaches, administrators, and people listened, and now it's kind of like we listen to laugh a little bit. So that goes into my question. When the SEC has their meetings and they talk about their preferred postseason, is it as simple as them just going out there and saying this is unpopular, nobody wants to do 24? Like, what do you think their messaging has to be?
Yeah, I mean, I do think actually it is weird that Tony Petitti has marshaled all his, right? The SEC, it feels like the reporting, they're split. Some coaches want this, some coaches want that. Lockstep from the Big Ten meetings. Everybody says 24. It's amazing. He's got the other conferences, everyone on his side. But, like, the perception, the consensus of what fans want is not on 24. So if the SEC can gather that, right, like, this is not what the average fan wants. I'm curious if that can be effective. And then again, if we, I don't think, you guys know, we can talk about 24. I'm fine with 24. I think it could be fine. If the answer to all of this is a stalemate, I don't think a stalemate is bad.
Agree.
I think they're greasing the wheels for that, Doug.
Big Ten won't budge off 24. SEC's not going to 24. We stay at 12. There's a lot of smart people who I think are still like, why don't we just see how 12 does?
Yeah.
Let's see how 12 does. What's the rush? But to not let, I think it is a victory in and of itself. Again, I almost don't care what the topic is. But if the SEC and ESPN don't get their way, they don't get to say 16, everybody falls in line at 16. That's a victory. So if it means status quo, okay. And then we can see. And again, I would just say, again, I think the data shows you 16 does not get many Big Ten teams in from 12. It gets a lot more SEC teams in. But if we stay at a stalemate in 4 years from now, the middle of the Big Ten is more respected. And if you go from 12 to 16, it actually helps the Big Ten. Then I think Tony Petitti might be fine with it. Yeah. And so 2 or 3 years from now, if the perception of the sport changes, again, if we were at 16 last year, it would have been Notre Dame, BYU, Vanderbilt, and Texas. Mm-hmm. Those are the four who would have gotten in. They didn't get in. That's nothing for the Big Ten. So why would Tony Petitti want to go from 12 to 16? It's nothing. But the SEC gets two more? That's the reality. They don't say that out loud. That's the reality. If 2 years from now, there would have been two Big Ten teams who would have gotten in if you were at 16 instead of 12, I think that changes the conversation. So anyway, if we stalemate for now, mm-hmm. I'm good with it.
It feels like that's where we're headed. Yeah. All right. Great stuff as always, buddy. Appreciate you.
Thanks, fellas. Talk soon.
There he goes. That's Doug LeMaurice, the Bill and Doug Show on YouTube, the Substack, BillandDougOSU.substack.com. We'll get you three things on a Friday. Coming up next, Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We're known for three things: games, conversation, and common man yelling about things only he cares about. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
For the ones who...
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
All your favorite fan shows are on YouTube. Along with those fake YouTube ads like Chew This Gum and It Grows New Teeth. Experience the splendor of Bo sitting in his closet. Timmy Hall's gaudy gold chains. And Matty Ice wearing a coat in 90 degree weather. It's all there. Head to YouTube and subscribe today.
The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
After putting up with Dom DeBerry for a decade, the broadcast gods gave Bo these two. This is Bishop and Friends.
Hi, Bank, what are you on the poll today?
The Daily Fan Poll, sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub. Will you be watching the Indy 500? 64% of you say no, 36% say yes.
Columbus is usually pretty good ratings-wise for that stuff. So, I mean, if I'll have it in the mix. It'll be in the mix. I'll check in on it.
Hopefully. Background noise.
I think there used to be a time where those numbers were flipped.
That's probably exactly right. That goes to what I was talking about with Tim, about how, like, that your silos of things you're interested in are so narrowed now. Well, Josh, you and I were talking about that. Like, you're just only in your silos a little bit. So there's some of that's out there for sure. Time for three things on a Friday.
One, two, three things.
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
I'll do a sports one off the top. So this is a headline on ESPN right now. Brian Windhorst: Lakers need to approach LeBron with a plan. So now we've heard Wendy and McManaman say that the Lakers have to impress upon LeBron with their plan for him in order for him to resign. I'm as big a LeBron fan as you're going to find. We're not there anymore. They're not there anymore. He's still really, really good. All of it. Is he worth $55 million a year? Not to a team that's got to pay Luka and Reeves and God knows what else to fill out that roster. They're not winning a championship with him, but they're still... This is like the playbook for the last 20 years with him. That teams have to like impress upon him why he should sign with them. There could be some of that, a couple of teams maybe, but the whole league isn't bending over backwards for him anymore. He's in his 40s.
The whole league isn't bending over backwards, but there certainly are, as you mentioned, the few teams. And I think that's if you're the Lakers, like that's, if you want him back, you got to compete with that.
I think that he needs them more than they need him.
I don't disagree with that.
I think if he's going to live in Los Angeles, he cannot leave the Lakers and be considered a Laker legend. He won't be, not in that
town. Will he be considered a Laker legend anyway?
I think he wants it. It's a good point out of you, but I think he really wants that. I think he craves that. I think he wants his number in the rafters.
I think so, too. If that's what he's after, then it's a different conversation than what we're having right now. All right, my first thing, just right off the top, I do want to give honor to the nation's heroes this weekend. And also, everybody be safe. Be safe at home. Be safe on the roads. Do the smart thing.
Mm-hmm. So, Bo, we didn't get this yesterday about the work dream that I had the night before last. So, we were scheduled to have Urban Meyer on the phone. And it was at the top of the hour. And for some reason, I don't know why, we were coming back from break and you said, hey, hold off on getting Urban on the phone just a minute or two. I want to talk about something else, which would never happen. We won't do that to Urban Meyer. So you start the segment and then I try to get Urban on the phone and everything goes wrong. At first, all the phone lines are being used for some reason. Then I can't get the phone to work. The next thing I know, Urban Meyer's texting me like, hey, I've only got a few minutes. What are we doing? Then he's calling my cell phone like, hey, what's going on here? I finally get him on the phone. It's like 9 minutes into the opening segment. We've got like 2 or 3 minutes left to talk to him. It was a disaster. And I woke up sweating and my heart was racing.
Welcome to the business. Now you've had a business fever dream. AR and I talk about this all the time. Joshua, I'm sure you've had them too.
Yes.
Where you're racing to get somewhere, and can you get there in time? Because when the red light goes on, you got to go. So that is fantastic. Number two for me, Buddy Garrity, the 3-year-old golden retriever, is now figured out how to use his nose to prop open the garbage drawer. So I see him yesterday. My guy is pulling things out of the garbage and trying to eat it. I've had dogs my whole life. I have never in my life, and he's properly fed. In fact, so much so that the vet says he's overweight, which I don't buy that he is. But the vet says that he's a little overweight. I have never had a dog who so relentlessly pursues nourishment the way this guy does. Every time he's fed, it's like he hasn't eaten in a month. Every single time he's fed.
That tickles me, man. I'm not a dog guy, but they do some things that just give you a good belly laugh every once in a while when you don't own them, which is awesome here. All right, so my second thing, I'm going to share a story that I shared with Bake a little bit earlier. But last year, we had a cookout at my mother-in-law's house. I can't remember what holiday it was for, but it was one of those bring a side dish, just show up and do your thing. And my brother-in-law, who was 20 at the time, was supposed to be cooking up some food. So he had his Blackstone, he had a grill, he was doing burgers on the griddle, and he was doing hot dogs on the grill. And he looks over at me at some point, we got like 50 burgers, probably 75 dogs, and he says, JP, I'm stressed. And he disappeared.
Gone.
He disappeared. And so I'm like, all right.
Tap it out.
I'm like,
he just gone?
He disappeared.
Ghost?
And so I'm like, all right, well, somebody grab me an apron. I'll finish this thing up. So we're doing it again this weekend, and I'm hoping that I don't have any surprise duties when I get over there.
When did you see him? How long was he gone?
Oh, a good 30 minutes. He went, took a shower, cleared his mind. He was stressed. Give the young man a break.
That's why burgers are tough.
Yeah, burgers.
Burgers are tough. Because you all the different cooking temps, I feel his pain. Burgers can be tough unless you go smash burgers.
Don't wear the nice shirt this year.
No.
You can Pick and Pull is having their annual Memorial Day sale this weekend. I'm going to be out there later today from 1 to 3. So come on over, say hi. We've got some fan swag to give away. It should be a fun time.
That's awesome. Finally, for me, Monday, I'm turning all of my attention goes to you. Seems like Saturday and Sunday are going to be a wash. Monday, I need you to come through for me in a big way.
All right, final thing. I said it earlier. I need college football to slow down. It's an inflection point right now. We're doing a little bit too much. I feel like we're going to lose some people. This is a good point to stay where we're at and just let it ride.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Don't go anywhere. Rothman and Ice got you covered here in your afternoon. They're switching Gold Jacket Thursday to the day. They'll talk to Jack Ham at 1 o'clock. Little baseball talk with Jensen Lewis, Chin Music at 2:30.
That'll be cool. Get some Penn State chatter probably too as well, how the Matt Campbell hire is working out over there. Enjoy your long weekend, everybody. We're back on Tuesday. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Catch T-Bone and Tyvus weekday mornings from 6 to 9. If you're not completely satisfied, we'll rewind time and erase your brain.
For real. Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Mountain with lots to do. Give me the sunshine, give me a do. Give me something simple and true. All I need is sunshine and a cool, refreshing mountain dew. So give me my good friends, give me a do.
Grab some friends and an ice cold Mountain Dew today.
Mountain Dew.